Hey everybody, welcome to an officially unofficial, no, this is official.
This is as official as Bald Move gets.
It's from the horse's mouth. It's our Q&A, 10 million podcast download extravaganza.
We've officially crossed 10 million downloads, like 2 months ago.
It wasn't that long ago, was it?
It's a while. We're almost at 11 now. We're like 10.7.
Well, no, that's an insane amount.
More than I ever would have guessed that we'd get to.
An insane amount, considering like our average podcast length is in the 50 to 60 megabyte range. Like that is just an inconceivable number of bits to flow.
We should try and calculate how many bits we pushed.
I actually did way back when how many terabytes that we had pushed so far. But like now, I mean, it's an easy calculation. Shall I do it?
No.
Okay.
No, that would take up too much time.
So we've done a couple of these before. I know we did one for our first, what was it, the Kickstarter?
Yeah, as a reward.
I think we did one for a 5 million celebration. Mm-hmm. Someone called us out on Reddit for an AMA that we did, and I'm going to...
Yeah, I'm shocked that we got an AMA. What the hell?
It had several hundred upvotes and responses.
It was allowed to happen.
Yeah. We did an AMA.
Weird.
That was really fun. I'm going to link all of those to this podcast. Right. It's also in video format, so if you click through to baldmove.com, you can actually see us in our studio. Mm-hmm. Also, for general kind of origin story type stuff, you can go to baldmove.com/about. So if you want to know like the particulars of us growing up or and how we started Bald Move and why it's called Bald Move, all that stuff is answered there. And we also have some studio stuff, too, if you want to know what equipment we use. So with all those frequently asked questions, let's get to the meat of it. This was the first question we got from Jake. Have Jim and Aaron ever engaged in fisticuffs? So many years of friendships, debates, arguments. Has anything physical ever broken out?
This is the most pressing question on the listener's mind. First thing to come in. Oh, Q&A. I got a question for
you. After listening to hundreds of hours of Bald Move, you guys ever thrown down?
No, that would
lay hands on Jim
so badly for me, real badly. I mean, you've taken boxing classes. You're about 6 inches taller than me,
at least 100 pounds heavier.
Yeah, that would not
it's
work
one of those
out
things
in
where it's
my
like,
favor.
If I did, I'd feel like a bully. And if you happen to manage to beat me like you do in every other fucking thing, then
feel real bad.
There's no coming back from that.
Yeah.
There's no coming back from that.
If I was in the studio saying, I will beat your ass again.
Like right now, that's my one edge in the debates. Like you're smarter. You're a more logical thinker. I've always got the implied threat of violence.
None of that is true.
The implied threat of violence sometimes carries the day. But no,
we have definitely had arguments, certainly.
Yeah.
And furious debates. But
sure.
Yeah.
Like once in a year, we get into a almost screaming match.
Yeah. That happens.
But the thing is like you gotta understand that we both care deeply about this, not just from the fact that this is our livelihoods, because that's also something, but also like we're kind of idealistic in how we always set out to run a business. So whenever we're talking about new initiatives, we have to think, you know, it's you, me, and the listeners in the room, and how's that gonna be perceived, and you know.
Yeah,
there is no right or wrong answers when you're trying to do things that no one else has done before, like our set pricing on perks and club stuff. And but it's also super, super personal.
And there's the pressure of this has got to work or we're going back to regular jobs that we may or may not be qualified for anymore. Right. Like
I'll be 40 next year. I can't go back to programming.
Yeah.
The young ones will run me out of the tribe.
So there's always the pressure to get it right. And that leads to some arguments every once in a while.
And like the thing, you know, when you have that's the curse of being 50-50 partners is when you have a difference of opinion, you have to bring the other guy to the table because it's essentially every initiative is dead unless you get both people to buy into it.
Yeah.
And you might think that it is the greatest and it's obvious thing to do. And the other guy's like, I don't want to do it. Or I think that's dumb. Or I think that's bad for the company. You got to either change your mind or you don't. So, that's also one of the good things about it too. You have to barter and negotiate and make, I think that's what
forces you
happens.
To think about it a lot.
What usually happens is like, if we have a Titanic battle, we'll let it go for a week and then we'll come back and we'll have independently worked on some kind of compromise. Or, you know what?
We both
realized, I thought about it. I don't really care that much about it. I'm going to let you do this crazy thing.
Or we both realize that we both care so much about our particular side of it that neither one is going to win, and therefore we have to compromise, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Have to come together and figure out something that both of us can participate in. But no physical fights. That would be a folly of... that would be a comedic folly on my part.
It's funny because I have fought, like I was thinking, I have fought some of my friends and like my brother when we're all I think
yeah, if brothers fight.
Like Ace Jace and I fought, but we're also a very even match physically.
Yeah,
so I think that's like if amongst relatively even matched friends, I feel like that fighting, and it's not like I tried to hurt him. It's just more like you just get in a fight.
Yeah, pushing and wrestling and
yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe some punches were thrown, but they weren't like, you know, knock your teeth out or beat you until you can't walk kind of fights.
Yeah. Until your legs don't work.
Until your legs don't work.
Yeah. That's the other thing, right? Like, you're a few years older than me. So if we ever would have been about the same size, it wouldn't have been about the same time.
Mm.
And so, like, there's no age at which a fight is beneficial for me at all.
No. More of a lover than a fighter in any way.
Yeah.
Jim F. has a question, mm-hmm. and they're kind of related, two questions. What is the longest amount of time you've each gone without using the internet, and also favorite vacation spots?
Oh, they are related. Recently. It's Beaver Island, man.
Went to Beaver Island, Michigan.
Yeah, I don't know since I was, what, 12?
On the internet?
Got on the internet, if I've ever been without it for more than a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Beaver Island, I was almost entirely without the internet. I mean, every once in a while, you'd go into town, and you'd get... 4G. Spotty LTE.
4G would roll in.
Yeah. And you'd go, oh my God, I've got internet. And you'd go Google searching everything your mind can think of. But yeah, it's been about a week is the longest.
Yeah, it's about that. I remember one time a couple of years back, I did it as an experiment. I went...
I did the same thing.
I went a month without the internet.
Oh, but here's the thing. Didn't do that.
My job was a developer, so like I had rules that I could do job related stuff on the clock.
Yeah.
But that's almost like cheating. Like it would be interesting to just, and now I can't do that, obviously.
No.
It'd be interesting to unplug. I will say that it immediately slows your life down.
Yeah.
In kind of a good way.
You have more time for everything.
And you're more present. Like I was right now, it's like my brain is to the point where if I have to wait for 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just like, I'll be alone with my thoughts, whip out and go on to Reddit or check Facebook or whatever.
Yeah.
So
as far as favorite vacation spots, I really love Chicago. Chicago's a great city.
Yep.
I feel like that's less of a vacation and more of just like a place where I feel comfortable and go. It doesn't feel like a vacation when I'm there. It feels like a road trip or something.
Home.
Yeah, a vacation for me is like the Smoky Mountains. Smoky Mountains are one of my favorite places to go. Go down to like Gatlinburg, Tennessee, rent a cabin, stay in the woods for a week or so. That's really awesome. I love that.
Yeah, I like that too. Honestly, I like Beaver Island, like I mentioned.
Yeah.
And if you don't know, that's an island chain that's in the middle of the lake, in the middle of Lake Michigan. And I've gone... For a couple of years now, we went twice last year.
Like 5 years?
Yeah, probably. I first because
you've been there a lot. Yeah.
I have. My girlfriend Cecily's parents owned a spot on the island when she was growing up that they since given up. So she had this like you know this little favorite spot of hers that she introduced me into, and every time I go, we go back, we do something different. Like you know, we'll do something bigger. Like the time before we went with you guys is we went camping and we only took our bikes across the ferry. So we biked everywhere on the island as a kind of fitness challenge. And next year, we're going to take my dad's sail. He's got a 14-foot sailboat. We're going to tow across the ferry and then kind of explore the island.
You're not just going to sail over there?
Not on a 14-foot, no.
It's what, 35
Something
miles?
Like 35-ish miles across fairly treacherous. I mean, you can get a storm blow up and nothing flat. And I'm not going to be in the middle of that thing in 600
foot
feet
chop.
Of water. And
yeah.
Yeah, no fucking way. But yeah, I'll sail the hell between those islands once I get there.
Oh, yeah.
I like Indiana Dunes National Park. It's a really nice place to go camping. I like Okaloosa Island in Florida. It's in the Redneck Riviera, the crotch of Florida, if you will.
Mm. I went to Sanibel Island one time. That was awesome.
I've heard of that, but I've never actually been.
It's out by the Keys.
I really like going to Quebec City in Canada. The old city is like one of those old European walled cities, and everyone speaks French, and it's cobblestone streets, and you can kind of forget you're still in the Americas.
I've never been outside the continent, unfortunately. I've never honestly been that far outside of this country. Like, I went to Tijuana, which is barely outside of San Diego when I lived there. And then I went to Windsor, Ontario, Canada, which is like barely outside of Detroit. So
and Ontario is kind of the most American like I haven't been out of the US. The Canadian provinces, I feel like.
Yeah, it's a real shithole.
Whoa. I don't know about that.
We went up there to go gambling because one of my friends in college wasn't old enough to gamble here. Uh-huh. So we went up there to drink and gamble.
And then also another favorite spot is Deals Gap, North Carolina, which is up in the Smokies. And it's a motorcycle vacation because there's a bunch of fantastic road. There's the Charahola Skyway, which was a highway that's actually on the ridge of a mountain. Line it's like I don't know 5,000 feet high or something like that, and then of course the Dragon, which is like 311 curves in 8 miles. There's some insane roads. They're all just beautiful, but yeah, that's the my most favorite vacation spots. Alex M wants to know, if you could play yourself as a peripheral character in any TV or movie universe, which universe would you choose and why?
Oh man,
I chose Firefly because
that's a cool one.
I like the feeling of the old West, and I like the outer space, the fact that you can fly from planet to planet and getting adventures, and kind of like there's still that, you know, that's everyone said that that's the curse of our generation. We're born too late to explore the Earth and too soon to explore the stars. Like Firefly is that sweet spot.
Yeah, we're getting there with the stars. We're getting there. Yeah. It'll be a while. I'm not getting
that. I've resigned. No, I'm not going to outer space. Well, that's what I'm saying. Okay. Damn it. I'm not going to get to outer space. What's yours?
Man, so it's got to be something where peripheral characters have decent outcomes, right? It can't be like Game of Thrones. That'd be the worst, maybe. It's something where I wouldn't be instantly killed, right? Like, I don't know. I feel like I'd fare pretty well in a Mad Men universe, given that, you know, I'm a straight white male in the 60s.
Sure.
That's probably a fairly good outcome there.
Yep.
I feel like, but you know, that's not very interesting, right? Mm-hmm. Halt and Catch Fire? That might be a cool one, because you'd be in the technology. I'd be like on the team that made, I'd be the guy who got fired from the team.
It would be cool to be in the Wozniak era Apple, where you're soldering circuit boards in a garage and writing code to the bare metal. You're inventing
home computers.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
You're coming up, you know, you don't have standards and whatnot to follow. You're just...
For a techie like me, that's like the dream.
So you're going to... Is that your final answer? Halt and Catch Fire?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
But Peripheral says I'm sidelined too, so...
This is a lot of people ask this. When is the Deluxe Wire podcast coming? I don't know.
Never.
I do Never. Know that the season one of the True Detective was kind of like a pilot for how we would make that stuff work, but it was only a partial success because we sat out to get interviews with like police officers and college professors and psychologists and we weren't able to execute on any of that stuff, and that's what I want to do with The Wire. Like, I want to get these, you know, some of these contacts I've actually made and have signaled that they're willing to help me out on this. I got to find a way to do that within our work process and our workflow.
That's why I say never. It's a huge project.
It is a huge project, and I'm going to be honest with you. We're not great at executing on huge open-ended projects with no determinate deadlines on it.
Yeah.
And it's not a money thing. It's not a time thing. It's just
a procrastination and motivation and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's never going to happen, but I can't promise. every time we got a big gap in our schedule, I start thinking like, okay, well, maybe this is the time that I should buckle down and do it. And I'm going to be a little bit more cognizant of trying to carve those times out rather than looking to fill it, which is what we usually do. Okay, Tom from Volkswagen. This is a question for the quote unquote smart one. I don't remember.
Oh, so me. Okay.
Yeah, that's you? Well, okay.
I expected us to argue about that.
Whoa. Well, I just gave it up. I'm the brute.
I mean, obviously, and you're the brains. Obviously, he's addressing me. Come on.
He wants to know, for a question from the smart one, what is your co-host's most annoying trait?
Ha!
You didn't answer this last time. I answered it, and then after I answered it, you said, "Oh, I don't know," and I felt like a giant asshole.
I've got one.
All right, do it.
I'm trying to figure out how to term this. Being constantly vaped upon.
Mm.
Like you're a vapor.
Mm-hmm.
You like to vape, and this room is small, and so
I picked up vaping for my girlfriend. She used it to quit smoking
cigarettes.
It's a
silly thing. It's so silly.
And I don't even vape nicotine. I just do it because it helps me think. So when I'm considering email, compiling email, or reading Reddit theories, I tend to be on
you
this side
vape.
Of the table. I chain vape. Yeah.
And he's got a fan pointed across. This. All of it. All of it rolls across. If I'm being honest, all of it rolls across. Yeah. And it just, I don't know. It's one thing.
Do you want me to stop? Because I'll stop for you, Jim.
Oh, you'll stop for me.
Is this something that's going to, you know, just going to end the empire?
I've never said anything.
No, you've said it a couple times.
Have
but
I?
But kind of in the same way that, like, you fart. And I'll be like, Jesus Christ, stinky one. Or like, what did you eat, broccoli last night?
But I understand why people fart. I don't understand why they vape.
But you vaped before I vaped, motherfucker.
And I quit. Like,
so you did it just
almost
to quit
immediately.
Smoking. And then you quit.
No, I never really smoked that much.
Well, why did you start vaping then?
Because I thought it was going to be cool. And then I tried it for, I don't know, a couple weeks and was like, meh, don't really like it.
I just can't get enough of the robot cock.
Apparently not.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
So do you want me to stop?
It doesn't...
I didn't even bring my vape today. Oh. I'm kind of getting over it.
I don't know. We should put it up to a listener vote. No.
Fuck that.
It doesn't bother me that much, but it's definitely the most annoying thing throughout my day.
Okay.
I'm like,
well,
oh,
so
God.
I'm getting... I could just stop doing that.
All right.
How bad is it annoying now if I just continue to do it, though, knowing that I could stop at any time?
And that I've brought it up and
yeah,
it's,
sure.
It's a point of conflict.
Uh-huh. That's now
well,
super
that's
annoying.
That's yeah more egregious for sure.
Last time I said I don't understand how you value time or money. That continues to be the case.
Yeah, I don't understand it either.
For example, we were just having this conversation last week. You're like, oh, Cities XL is $20 on Steam. Ah, you know, I'm almost out of money this month. I can't justify that. Literally the next day, oh, it's on sale for $15. I'm thinking about getting that. I'm like, how can $5 on sway your decision?
I also wanted to do some streaming of it. I got a good video out of it. Aaron's
there
hole.
There you go, Aaron's hole. Yeah, yeah. So that continues to be something. I study
yeah,
Jim. I
it
study Jim
me too.
I study Jim to try to figure out because he goes through these like obsessive patterns.
Oh yeah,
of things that you do. And you get really into it, and then sometimes it sticks with you, sometimes it doesn't. And I study you like an anthropologist to try to figure out what do all these patterns mean.
Are you keeping
logs? What type
logs?
Of person? Yeah,
like journaling my.
You haven't noticed?
No,
I've built a blind.
Maybe I'm
in
so
your living
concerned
room.
About the vapor.
That little vase plant thing you got is just a blind for my studies.
You're hunched down in there, waiting,
yeah,
waiting and watching. Like, what's the gorilla lady?
Jane Goodall.
Jane Goodall. Yeah.
Jessica O.
One day I'm going to kill you.
your most annoying trait is you take half my money.
That's
by far. Like, Jesus, really? You're going to take half of this?
What is this, a 50-50 partnership?
What is this? Must have been drunk when I signed those paperwork.
Yep.
Jessica O. says, congrats. As fellow podcasters, I'd like to know, how did you know you had the potential to make this full-time?
So we accidentally started making money.
Yep.
With an Amazon link.
Because we got to the where the bandwidth was approaching several hundred dollars a month.
Because we screwed up. Like, we decided, oh, we're going to do this all through S3, and we're going to host our
I
own
don't
shit.
We screwed up, but, like, some of this stuff was, like, so new. Like it's not, yeah. Like, today, it's like I'd tell someone, go to Libsyn. Go, if
oh,
you
yeah.
want to host a podcast professionally, go to Libsyn. They'll mm-hmm. fix you up. That wasn't, like, an obvious thing. You still had the Podbean, and, like, that's solution
true,
still.
Yeah.
And there's, like, a bunch of free stuff, and... We got burnt on a couple of those. with the reliability and stuff.
So we went to S3, and then S3 started getting too expensive, like a couple hundred bucks a month. And then we decided, oh, we got to put up this Amazon thing, and that kind of blew up.
Because we can afford, at the point, we were both programmers, like, we can afford a couple hundred bucks a month on this hobby. Well, not a big deal, but maybe we can defray some of this cost with Amazon. Mm-hmm. And that thing, over the next 2 years, grew to where it was starting to pull in, like, $1,000 a month.
Yeah, and eventually, you know, we started doing some advertising and stuff, and we got to the point where we're like, all right, this is approaching a salary that could support both of our lifestyles.
But we also needed, the thing is, like, because we're not advertisers, we're not marketers, we had no plan to get more advertising. The advertising we get literally falls into our lap.
Yeah.
So where are we going to make up the gap? Is would people actually pay us to podcast? And that's how the Kickstarters were born.
Yeah, we did.
That's a dip in the end, like, okay, well, that scales to multiple shows, and then we can do it. And we looked at we spent all of 2014, or no, it's 2013, like, trimming down. Like, I sold my house, I sold my car, I, you know, pared down a whole bunch of stuff in my lifestyle, and we both kind of shrank to where this is as small as we can go. This is as small as we can get. And then 2014, we had a debate. Like, we were really on the, like, should we just, because we didn't
we
really.
We thought we were going to miss our opportunity, given how many other podcasts are out there and stuff.
We weren't quite ready to do it full time. We didn't have the money in place. We didn't have the funding in place. But also, if we waited another year just doing a show a week, like, what if some other network comes and eats our lunch or blows up? So we decided to say, fuck it. We've got some savings. We got credit cards. We can self-fund, you know, because we did projections and all this stuff. And we actually projected running out of money 6 months into this and having to kick in our way.
But we didn't really project any advertising money. So that's helped. And, like, club has been a fair success.
And we keep this projection continually going. Right now, we're projected to run out of money in October of 2016.
Yeah.
Which is a year from now. But that's the thing. Like, people might be like, oh my God, this is shocking. In October 2016, we might be projected to run out in February 2019.
Or never.
If nothing changes right now, this is all the money we get and we never get any more. That's so, I feel like every single time that goes out a little bit further into the future, then we're doing good. If it starts coming back into less into the future, then that's when we get kind of get gimped up.
Sure.
We had an honest debate, like, before Game of Thrones, when we did this club bald move. We're like,
we had some real bad projections. Yeah,
we had some real bad projections, and we're like, man, we could be calling this in June, because neither one of us are going to go down. You know, I'm not going to cash out 100% of my 401k before. You're not going to use every single one of your credit cards before. Yeah, that'd be stupid. And we had, like, you know, what are we going to, it's like, well, let's get through Game of Thrones and, you know, The Walking Dead and see how it goes. And the club went better than expected.
Yeah. And that's where a lot of the tension came from. One of our bigger arguments came from, right?
Sure.
Like, that idea of, what are we going to do with this club? Mm-hmm. What do we charge? How do we execute on it? Like, this is kind of a last
ditch. That was a month of us butting heads about what the pricing should be, what the perks should be. Should we have tiers? Should we... You know,
and it was all predicated on that idea that this might be the last season that we get through. Yeah. We might get through Walking Dead and Game of Thrones, and if this club doesn't work,
we can't put people through yet another migration to some other fucking funding.
So this is it.
We were sick of it. We knew you guys were sick of it. So this is kind of do or die, and so far it's do. We kind of talked about this. What kind of projections did you make in terms of income for downloads / number of club members to make it work? Or are there any other metric income levels to make it a viable business?
Yeah, we didn't get super specific on that. Like, oh, here's how much we make on a club member. Here's, like, we kind of did, but
we've since done that. But we had this idea that we needed X, like, we needed fantastic success would be like 5,000 club members.
Income per download, I would love to get that number, but it's so hard to come up with.
Yes. I think our baseline is we need 1,000 club members, and we've kind of, like, in between there. We've got how many now?
No, we needed $1 a month. We were saying, oh, we need like 5,000 or something, or 2,500, I think.
Was 2,500 the bare minimum?
I think
5,000 was like the over the moon projection.
We're somewhere around 1,500 at the moment.
Yeah.
So, you know,
we also had a lot more advertising than we expected.
And people aren't just giving us $1 a month sometimes. Exactly. They're giving us, some people are giving us like $20 a month, which is insane, but
yeah.
But I mean, thank you.
Right? Yeah, yeah. And also the commission podcast that we thought was just going to be like, oh, maybe two or three people a year.
Yeah.
The Dr. DeVitos of the world will do stuff like that.
I can't believe how many we've gotten.
We got 15 in the fucking hopper, man. And we've done at least that many. Yeah. So that helped out.
That helps out a ton. Yeah.
So right now, state of the business is we are making enough money for Jim to do this indefinitely.
Yes.
Because I have
child. I have less of a salary requirement.
And essentially, it's all because of my child support. So I'm probably another year away from not having to kick in money or go into debt. But it's definitely trending in the right direction.
Yeah.
And who knows? Like, also, we tend to do pessimistic projections. And I don't know how interesting on this purpose. Is to people. And by the way, we just got all of our paperwork and our accounting done for the tax year of last year. Mm-hmm. I intend to come up with a video that like shows all that.
We intended to do that last year too,
but yeah, but I'm saying that like I'm going to do it this year.
Okay.
And I think it's going to also look back. Like I want to show like every, like here's what show we made in 2011. Yeah. Here's what we made in 2012. Here's what we made in 2013. And just kind of show you like, cause I think it'll be, I don't know. I think it'll be surprising how little we make, but
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, but my goal is not to replace my old programming salary. My goal is to just break even doing something that I love that's a lot less stressful.
Exactly. Working for myself has been such an amazing thing.
Sure.
Like I can't even tell you how amazing that is.
So I think that's our other question is, are you meeting your minimums to keep this going? It's like essentially, like I will
close to it.
If trends continue or accelerate, which they traditionally do, we usually do better than we think. Is that I will be profitable, you know, early to mid next year, and then I can start paying off some of these debts and stuff that I've accrued. And also we've been waiting to get like 2 real years worth of tax returns so we can get some outside funding.
Yeah. Get a credit line or something.
Yeah. So then we can make up some of this personal debt and convert it to bald move debt, which is a lot easier to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, I've in the last year and a half blown through like 14,000 or something of like credit cards and savings and stuff like that. Yeah, so, you know, now I'm at the point where I'm actually going to make money each month because we just got our salaries evened out and all that stuff.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like I have
to my salary is so for much every smaller than yours.
That's the thing. Like we have to earn $2 for every more buck I need.
Yes.
So that's another annoying thing about my co-host. He didn't have kids and go through a messy divorce. So he's.
So what becomes your minimum requirement is profit.
Is your, you're snorting, you know, coke off hookers with $100 bills when I'm breaking even.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, the trade-offs, sacrifices.
I have the love of a child.
You do.
How can you put the money, any kind of money on that?
It's about $1,200 a month.
Yeah. That's a dollar figure, it turns out. So yeah, anything she says, is anything listeners can do to help? I mean, I join the club. Like if you want to pay more per month, you can, but like I'm the last person to tell you, like I've been poor back in my JW days when I was a firm believer and I was a pioneer and I got by working a part-time job and preaching and knocking on doors. I didn't have shit to spend.
You still are. Well, now you are.
Well, yeah, but, like I'm having more fun, but,
yeah.
So I know, like, if you don't have money, I certainly don't spend it on some dumbass podcasters.
Yeah.
But if you do like what we do and you want to see us succeed, then, you know, voting with your wallet's probably the best way.
And we did make it as cheap as humanly possible.
That was our core principle. Like, I don't want to gate anyone out of stuff that they want. And I wish I could give it away. We've debated about whether, like, to time gate this, like, maybe after a year rolling. I mean, that's stuff that we're talking. I don't want to talk about.
But I don't want everybody. It to. We also don't want it to be so complicated that people check out of it.
Yes.
They're like, you know what? I don't understand this. So fuck it.
Yeah.
It's almost better to have just like this super low price.
Yes.
Let everybody buy into this one thing that gets them everything and they never have to worry about it.
It is annoying because I really want it to be $1 a month just straight up. But the credit card fees such as that, we would be losing money, but you know, the proportion of money we'd keep for that $1. So that's why we make it, if the minimum price for a month is $2, minimum price for a year is $12.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, if you can't afford $12 a year, you probably don't have a computer and a smartphone to be listening to us anyway.
Yeah, you're in bad shape. So continue to enjoy our podcast for free. If you get some money down the line, you get back on your feet, whatever, you know, keep us in mind then. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Ant-Man B. Jim, you mentioned watching one of the Borgia shows a while back on one of the other lunches with Jim and Aaron. Which one are you watching, the Showtime series or the European one? What did you think of it?
It was a Showtime series.
I get to just sip rum during this.
So I thought it was pretty good, but I felt like it went off the rails once the Pope went crazy. I don't know how that sounds to Aaron, but the Pope goes crazy in that show.
Pope's always going crazy.
Starts seeing things, starts rubbing shit all over himself. I don't know. It's
literally big, shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
He shits in buckets and I don't know, basin or something. It's weird.
So it's the Pope version of the Aviator.
Essentially.
The Popeator.
Yep. Starring what's his face with the giant fat head, and I can't think of his name. You'd recognize
Jeremy
him
Irons?
Him. Yes.
I thought he's got a fat head?
Yeah, he's got a fat head. Well, he's got a fat everything, I guess.
Jeremy Irons is fat now?
In that show, yeah. Yeah, he's a big fat Pope, man.
Wow, I always thought him being kind of lanky and skinny. I mean, look, yeah, I always see him and he's got...
Look at him in Borgia, though.
All right, well, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, I was enjoying it, but that was one of the things I was like background watching. Mm. So, you know, I enjoyed it for what it was while I was background watching it.
Sure.
It wasn't something I concentrated on.
Freddie says, when is Bald Move going public?
As soon as we are big enough to get on the
NASDAQ. If we thought that would make us a ton of money, we'd do it right tomorrow.
I mean, going public, yeah.
I mean, there is like, we got shareholders.
For all intents and purposes, right?
You got shareholders to actually answer to rather than just people that you don't want to piss off because...
Yeah, the answer is probably never. Like, yeah. I don't see us ever. Why would we?
I mean, it's not a philosophical, like, I don't believe in public companies. It's more like, I just don't see it. I don't know.
The pressure then becomes, like, the pressure turns around to the other side. Like, right now, we make the content we want to make because we want to make it.
Yeah.
We think it's cool. We think the audience will think it's cool.
You have to make a profit,
and if you don't, you're either going to be out of business or off the NASDAQ or something. I don't know.
Or we get kicked off our own network. That'd be bullshit.
I mean, you can get brought up on fucking charges for not making a
profit. Yeah, right.
It's bullshit.
Well, actually, I would believe you'd be brought up on charges for failing to make a profit. If you're just stealing money from people and taking advantage of ignorant people, that's... You get a light slap on the wrist.
Okay.
You do real federal time
for not turning a profit. Yeah.
Dances with Wookiees says, what is the one show or shows you secretly or not so secretly love that everyone else hates or has been critically panned, and why do you like it? I have an answer, and it's reality television. Like
mine too.
I love American Choppers back in the day. Well, I don't even think that's on the air anymore.
Terrible.
But back in the day, I loved Monster House, Monster Garage, all those like
buildings. We throw you in a junkyard and you build something.
Stunt shit. I like Dual Survivor, like Cody.
Deadliest Catch is mine.
Cody and Joe are just fucking hilarious, and I love watching those guys. I like watching Bear Grylls drink his own piss, although his show is getting ridiculous. I like Les Stroud, Survivor Man. Mm-hmm. All that stuff is trashy and is of dubious use for me, but I do love watching it. I can, like, my happiest thought is when I have a Saturday night and, like, nothing else is going on. This is, of course, before I play Destiny. And, like, Discovery's having a Survivor Man marathon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Time to crack back the beers, wrap up in a blanket in the couch, and just turn off my brain. How about you?
Yeah, pretty much the same here. I like Pawn Stars and American Pickers and Deadliest Catch.
Oh, I loved it. Deadliest Catch back in the day. The first 2-3 seasons were legitimately gripping.
I thought so. and then like cooking shows. I like a lot of the Alton Brown stuff. He's got a good thing going.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like that's just a certain demographic that likes that stuff, not like, oh, those are shit shows.
But yeah, for as far as dry, I don't really watch shitty scripted stuff.
I don't watch any of like the CSIs or anything.
I mean,
like
you
that.
Would say American Horror, I guess, is my guiltiest pleasure. True Blood.
Yeah, True Blood was
got to be fairly guilty. But that used to be good. That's one of those things where I was stuck finishing something that I'd started. But nowadays, I'm trying to think of anything that I just watched as shit.
There's so much good TV, it's hard to
like even
carve
Fear the
out
Walking
time for
Dead's
it.
Not shitty. It's shitty by our standards, but it's not cover your eyes like, you know, I would be embarrassed to confess to watching it. He also said, funny story, Dances Wookiees does. I was listening to you guys through iTunes, the Game of Thrones podcast. I then started listening to this Fargo podcast through iTunes also. Sadly, it took me quite a while to realize I was listening to the same people in both podcasts.
Oh, wow.
That's amazing. I feel like we both have fairly distinctive voices that you would be easy to pick out. But maybe there's people that are like, you know, the same way that you can be tone deaf, maybe people are like voice deaf.
Or if you're like background listening, kind of.
Yeah.
Maybe you're just like half paying attention. Because our intros are the same on every show, right?
Sure.
Welcome to whatever show it is whatever network it is. I'm Jim.
And I'm Murr.
Yeah. So I feel like it'd be hard to miss that if you're paying attention right at the beginning.
All right. This is a doozy. A man is no one on the forum says, okay, guys, good news. I've just purchased a majority stake in HBO Inc. I'm putting you in charge of our next big project. I'm going to open up the checkbook and then sit back and watch the magic happen. Build me your dream show. Directors, producers, main cast, supporting cast, format. It's your world. I'm just living in it. What's the plan and why?
This is an amazing question.
This is an amazing question.
I love this. I've had an idea kicking around in my head for a while.
Okay.
For a show. And it has only become more urgent now that The Martian has come out.
Mm.
I feel like a modern day NASA show where NASA is, where either each season, where it's either one big long arc of like, let's get a manned flight to Mars.
Yeah.
Or it's each season is kind of like a smaller
like
mission.
Like a fictionalized version like of From the Earth to the Moon or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, a dramatized, fictionalized version of that. I feel like that would go over really well right now. Where you're kind of like, oh, we've got the guys at the JPL doing their thing, and we've got the guys in Houston doing their thing. And
the astronauts,
like, they're all communicating and trying to figure out how we do this.
What's a person that goes to Mars on perhaps a one-way trip?
What are they thinking?
But it's certainly going to be, you know, 500, 600. It's going to be years before you see these people again.
Yeah.
And it's going to wreck your health. What do those people think? What do their families think?
And to me, the most fascinating part would be, you know, getting an inside, hopefully not too fictionalized, look at NASA and how they operate and like how the different parts of NASA communicate and work together. But also you'd have to throw in like, you know, love interests and families and a lot of different stuff that would make this drama more palatable to, I guess, the general population.
Sure.
The people who aren't just in it for the science.
Mm. So who you got? Who do you attach to this project?
So I've got some names.
I got a suggestion for producer, Thomas Hanks.
Tom Hanks is a good one.
Thomas Hanks would have the checkbook open, and he'd have the guys at NASA that you could talk to for, like, authenticity. Like, he'd bring a lot to the project. He's done this.
Yeah, Apollo 13 was kind of
And he did. Masterful. He produced. He was one of the executive producers on From the Earth to the Moon.
Oh, shit. I didn't know that.
So, like, he'd have this.
I think a Tom Hanks, like, I'm going big. I'm shooting for the moon here. No pun intended.
Shooting for Mars
here.
Phobos.
Steven Spielberg. Let's bring Steven Spielberg in to executive produce
Hanks
this thing.
Hanks and Spielberg.
I don't want him like in the creative, but I want him setting this thing up, right? Because he knows how to get a job done.
He needs to turn on the money spigot and make it happen.
Exactly. Okay. I think for directors, I'm going to do this like rotating director thing, right? Like most TV shows do. I'm going to start off with Christopher Nolan. I think Christopher Nolan could make an excellent episode of a space-based technology-oriented show.
It'd be about a man with daughter issues.
I mean, maybe. But he'd have the premise for the show, right? He's just the director, right? Okay. He's not going to write this thing.
Okay.
So he's going to execute on a vision. Ridley Scott, I think, is a no-brainer, given The Martian. Danny Boyle, who did...
That's 28 Days Later, guy.
28 Days Later. I like his style. Huh. I like his style a lot.
He directed a Crisis episode.
There you go.
Inevitably, when someone's, maybe even they die. Maybe there's the first mission.
Half of the crew dies.
Half the crew dies.
Yeah.
Or it's testing. It's like, you know, who the guy, Gus Grissom and whatnot, died like on the launch pad for just some training thing.
Yeah. And then the other guy I would like to have on this after seeing Moon a couple of years ago is Duncan Jones. I think Duncan Jones does like a... Have you seen Moon?
I have not seen Moon. I know of it, though.
It's this very solitary. It's got Sam Rockwell in kind of the only role in this, aside from the robot.
Hmm.
He's isolated on the moon, and some stuff happens. I won't give away spoilers, but I think he could do a really good job on it. Showrunner, who do you think my showrunner is going to be?
Vince Gilligan.
Yep.
Ah.
Of course. Of course.
Does he have any particular fondness for this material? You just build, you just bring no, up but the I think strength he of constructs his
show a solid show.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
For writers, I'm going to put him in a room, Vince Gilligan in a room with, I'm going to pair him up with the awesome Moira Wally Beckett, because she wrote a lot of my favorite episodes of Breaking Bad, and David Fincher. I think David Fincher gives you the snap that you need on the dialogue with NASA, right?
Okay.
There's a speed, a certain rhythm to the NASA communication.
You're talking about Sorkin. You going for Sorkin?
Fincher, too. I mean, he did Social Network, right?
No, that was Sorkin that wrote it. I think Fincher directed. Are you talking about directing or writing?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Because if you're wanting
snappy, Sorkin. Fast-paced, walk-and-talk dialogue, you got to get Sorkin.
You're right. Okay.
You got to talk him into doing television again, because he said fuck television after the newsroom.
We'll shove David Fincher into the director category.
Okay.
And then we'll bring Aaron Sorkin in for the writing.
All right.
The cast is the hard part, because I know that I want some stars, and I was thinking maybe as an astronaut you could get like Leonardo DiCaprio in there, see what he can do on the small screen. And I feel like he wouldn't really play the scientist very well. Like, I don't view him as like this really intelligent, kind of like a little neurotic sort of character. Mm. I view him more as like, you know, the leading man with the boisterous personality and that kind of stuff. And
yeah,
that fits the astronaut role.
Yeah.
And then I think I would bring in Carrie Coon for an astronaut as well.
Hmm.
I think she could pull off a good astronaut. She
would give a good like mission commander or specialist, sure.
I think so, yeah.
She's got that no-nonsense approach.
Yeah. But I'm struggling on the others. I know I want some unknowns, right?
Uh-huh.
Like some people who come in on casting and, well, like, whoa, I didn't expect that from them.
Uh-huh.
Sign them up.
All right.
But you can't really cast those without, because they're unknowns.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
What are you going to do?
That's nothing. You let central casting take care of it.
Mm-hmm. So that's my show.
All right. I've got two pitches. They're both adaptations. So I kind of cheated, which is why I came up with two of them. First, Patrick O'Brien novels. So these are set in the 17th and 18th century, the Age of Sail, the Napoleonic Wars.
Based on the Master and Commander series?
Based on the Aubrey Maturin series that later was adapted into a movie, Master and Commander, Far Side of the World, which is kind of a pastiche of four of the books.
Hmm.
Like the main plot from one and then a couple of set pieces from the other.
Wait, so I thought Patrick O'Brien was a writer of those books.
He is. He's dead now, though.
But it's based on another set of books?
Well, so the books aren't called Master and Commander.
Oh. Oh, okay. The movie is.
The movie is called Master
and Commander. Or the mini series or whatever that thing is.
Yeah. Master and Commander is the rank slightly below a captain. It's like Commander Riker. They're called, they're like, if Commander Riker was the captain of the Defiant.
Okay.
He'd be a master and commander. He'd probably
be. So Worf was a master commander.
You could call him captain by courtesy. And then you're a post captain once you become an appointed captain of an actual rated ship.
Naval ranks are so confusing. It's all confusing,
but it's super interesting. And I would like to get Peter Weir, because I know he was interested in making sequels to the movie. He's the director of the first one.
Oh, okay.
But I guess the movie did well, but this was a super expensive movie to make because they actually had an old ship of the line that they used for all of the, I mean, they'd use sets, of course, but they actually filmed a lot on this old boat, and it cost a hell of a lot of money.
You need James Cameron directing that thing.
Well,
if you got a boat.
I feel like that Weir really respected the original material, and I think what makes Patrick O'Brien works is that it's so utterly rooted in its time and place. Like all the dialogue, even the way the book is written feels like it feels like something that was written in 1805 and has now been published for the modern day. And it's hard to explain how that is other than, you know, we're just used to a certain type of novel. Like, you know, the way things are described with really long, you know, kind of flowery, and the way dialogue is set up. He doesn't like, sometimes he doesn't use quotation marks when he's quoting several people, and you just have to buy, it feels like you're at a dinner party and you're just getting snippets of stuff.
What Navy is this? Is it the British Navy?
It's the British Navy.
Okay.
And I kind of want to take all the main cast in the movie, even though they're too old to play the very beginning. And I would like to do this. Like there's 20 books. You could do a book or two every season. So you're talking about 10 to 15 year run show. But it also, every book is kind of self-contained. So there, it has a long narrative arc that eventually, but each one is kind of severable. Each book is kind of like this part of the Napoleonic War and this part of, and oh yeah, here's 1812 and we're at war with the Americans again. And oh fuck, Napoleon so escaped Alba.
It'd be like Star Trek.
Yeah.
Where each week is a new adventure, or would it be more serialized?
Each season would be a story that goes somewhere. And then there's also ties from some season to season, but it's not usually like there's like a three book series here and there where you kind of have to take them as a unit, but you could probably do that in a single season.
Okay.
Because the books are not as overly long either. And I'd like to use all the main cast in the movie, even though they're too old. I thought that Russell Crowe was great as Captain Jack. I thought that Paul Bettany was awesome as the surgeon, the doctor, Stephen Maturin. The things they fucked up is they cast Peregrine Took as Barrett Bondon, which is like the biggest, baddest ass sailor on the boat. That's horse shit. I want to cast Jason Statham. Right. And also, they had this dude, Awkward Davies, which is this vicious, brutish. Like, if you want to board a ship and you send this guy with boarding axes and pistols, and this, he just gets a job done because he's so fucking terrifying. Mm-hmm. I want Tom Hardy in full-blown Bronson mode for that.
All right.
So, yeah, the other one is Harry Dresden novels, which are, you know, I've said it a bunch of times, but it's essentially a no-shit wizard, like Gandalf the Grey Wizard, but in modern times, he's 30-ish, and he works as a private investigator in Chicago. Okay. And I actually think this would work really well as an animated series. Hmm. It might be the only way it works, because that's why you don't have to worry about special effects. Can you draw this interdimensional portal spewing out a demon onto, you know, the Miracle Mile?
I've seen that on He-Man. Yes, you can.
You can. but I'd like to get Joss Whedon to produce, direct, and write with Drew Goddard backup.
I almost put Joss in there.
Because the books very much read as something from the Buffyverse and their sensibility and their dialogue.
Yeah.
I've got a couple ideas. Like, I think Timothy Oliphant would be an awesome Harry Dresden. I think Carl Urban. Who's Carl Urban? He played Judge Dredd in the latest Dredd movie. Would be a good Harry Dresden. Nathan Fillion doesn't look like him, but he's got the attitude down. Plus, you know, Nathan Fillion doesn't work enough, in my opinion.
Yeah,
and
he's doing a lot of video games lately.
The police sergeant that he's interfacing with all the time, Murphy, I think Rachel McAdams, pretty much in her current True Detective season 2 mode. You drop that character, that's Karen Murphy, done deal. And there again, this is already a 13 book series. He intended to be a 20 book series. I just can't believe they don't. If you cast the right mid 20s cast. Because each book takes approximately a year in the life of Harry Dresden. Mm-hmm. You can make these movies Harry Potter style forever and rake in the bank, because they're all fucking awesome.
For the adult crowd.
So there you go.
I would also need to put Peter Stormare somewhere in mine. He's so good in Armageddon. How can you not?
Would he be Russian?
Of course, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but you know, he would have his Swedish-Russian accent.
All right, D from Australia would like to hear me speak for a few minutes on my specific objections to The Usual Suspects, as I've heard him briefly rant about it many times. It's one of my favorite movies, and I'd like to know why he hates it so much. So I don't know if I can explain this, because it's been a while since I've seen it, but here's my recollection of the movie. My recollection is it sets up a central mystery and asks you as the viewer to kind of figure out the central thing about Kaiser Soze and who's behind all this stuff. And the very final reveal of the movie is essentially all that bullshit you just watched for the last hour and 50 minutes. It's all bullshit. It's all Kevin Spacey making shit up and pulling stuff out of what he saw in the room and snowing over this detective. The end. All and right. I hate that. Like, it's essentially like, what if The Sixth Sense, you found out Bruce Willis a ghost, but
there were no hints.
There were no those scenes where he's ostensibly having dinner with his wife and he's trying to get into his basement, but it's locked. And those things are kind of like, what the fuck? Maybe he's in a disintegrating marriage. If those didn't exist and those were just all seen as flashback that they didn't show previously in the movie. And to me, like, a twist ending has to work when you watch it again. And I don't think this movie does. Incidentally, yeah. I just happened, like, I wonder what Roger Ebert thought, because I never looked, and he gave, Usual Suspects 1.5 stars and called it like the worst overrated movie that everybody else likes. And it's essentially the same thing. Like, to the extent that I don't understand this plot, I don't care.
Nice.
And I think I understand the plot and it doesn't matter. And that's how I feel about it. That's not how Memento works. That's not how, you know, like I said, The Sixth Sense works. It's not how the other Nolan movie that we like, Inception, works. Yeah. Those things are all very tight. And this just felt like it's jerking me around. So
okay,
I'd have to watch it again to be more specific, and I don't really want to watch it again. So Nathan says, I know you guys pride yourselves on being officially unofficial, and correct me if I'm wrong here. The only time you did something official was that one, The Leftovers speculation podcast for the finale. You remember correctly. My question is this. Would you be open in the future to hosting an official podcast if the opportunity presented itself on a show, if asked by actual executives, or would you decline the option in order to have freer speech and opinions? Basically, money, more authenticity, and possibly more interviews, etc., versus the ability to speak more freely and complain, critique the not-so-good aspects of the show.
So I think...
How big is the check?
I don't know that he's setting up a completely false dichotomy here, but I feel like there's more room in this than just like, you're going to get paid or you're going to be able to speak your mind. I would like to think that maybe there's room for it, a little bit of both, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, if I were going to do this, it would probably only be on a show that I already liked and knew that I liked and wasn't going to be week in and week out trashing it. Also, yeah, I guess there's how big is the check. Like, we're going to pay you $2 million over 2 years to do this. All right, cash out, and then I will start something new when I am done with the 2 years.
Or can we still do Bald Move while we're doing
this? Can we do another podcast on this thing that says how we really feel, whereas we're doing this one for kind of a mass audience, right?
Sure.
Like, I feel like there's a little wiggle room in there where it's not just like, be a corporate shill or say what you really think.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
But, you know, that's the thing. Like, I don't – we've thought about that, and we've actually talked at very low levels to some official sources about something like this. And I can't say anything more.
Yeah.
And it always breaks – because, like, they like what we do, but they want us to do it in a more family-friendly, like, PG-13 kind of way. Like, I feel like
– I don't have a huge problem with that because, like, I
– You say that –
No, we've okay, so the themes of the stuff we talk about are not probably going to be that family friendly, but I don't have a problem not cursing.
Ads don't enjoy not cursing.
I know, we don't see eye to eye on
that.
It
would take me a lot of practice to do that, but also I think part of that is just, I don't know, every time I start thinking about like, okay, I can't swear, that starts, I start talking in a way that is not myself.
But what if
I start like, falling back into, write, I'm giving a talk about the paradise on the platform, you know?
Would you not write like a book or a TV show meant for kids or something?
Sure.
So what's the difference?
Because I'm writing a show for fucking, I'm talking about an adult show meant for adults to adults. And I'm asked to... I don't know. Like, to me, like, that's the thing. Like, I always think it's weird when I'm listening to a show tiptoe around adult things because they're trying to have this general audience's show. And it's just, it always strikes me as more juvenile than if they just talk about, yes, this dude's getting a blowjob, or, you know, these people are, I guess, I don't know. I'm not articulating it very well. But
yeah, I get what you mean. I don't see a problem with not cursing, frankly.
If it was just, that's the thing. If it was just not cursing, I think I could probably get over that too.
You still got to talk about the themes of the show. And if the show has significant amounts of blowjobs,
that's what I'm saying. It just feels ridiculous to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Like every once in a while, we get someone that requests, like a fan's like, I really like your show.
Like a Justified? I don't know that a Justified would warrant.
Okay. Sure.
Like a lot of cursing
in
the show, right?
But also it'd be a huge problem if, like, again, I don't want to do a show that I'd have to slag. But, like, even Breaking Bad, if there was a show that I thought didn't work, or my first reaction is I didn't want this to happen, like, I wouldn't want to have a show where I'm drug, you know, on the carpet for doing something like my first reaction to the, what was that state? The Live Free or Die? Whichever the one that the cabin movie? One. No, the cabin episode of Breaking Bad. Like, I really viscerally did not like that.
Yeah, yeah, the second to
last.
A
couple months go by and I see it again and I'm like, okay, I really appreciate why this is genius. But my first reaction is, I don't think this is good and I'm not sure why they did it and I don't like it. And if I ever did a show where I couldn't say that, my honest opinion, I don't see how I could do it.
I also think there are maybe formats that get around that. Like, if you look at what Chris Hardwick does on
let's look at what Chris Hardwick does.
On his after shows, right?
Uh-huh.
He doesn't really give his opinion. He asks people what they thought. And for the most part, those people are part of the show. I don't know that I would feel comfortable like asking these softball questions and knowing that these people are trained to give the right answer.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And knowing that they're not really saying what they actually think.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could live with that, but I feel like there's some kind of interview format where you wouldn't be blamed for that. Maybe your guest would. And you could say, oh, yeah, well, we'll never have that guest on again. He slammed the show.
Yeah.
I agree with him, but he slammed the show.
I'd like a contract that you see sometimes with, like, biographers where it's like, I'm going to treat the show like,
yeah,
I'm going to follow the process and I'm going to write about the stories that it generated. That doesn't mean I'm going to.
Latest season of House of Cards.
Like, I don't think you can listen to our podcast and say we haven't hatchet to grind for creative people. We want them to succeed.
Sure.
And tell good stories. So I was like, I'll be fair, but if the fandom is not liking something and I'm part of that fandom and, you know, I can tell both sides. I mean, we also like even shows we hate, people that write in and say we love it and this is why, we give those people equal time. So I wouldn't want to send something where I felt like I didn't have editorial control.
Mm-hmm.
There again,
I wouldn't sign that contract.
$10 million. I'll do whatever the fuck you want me to.
Yeah, and then I'll be done with it.
And I'll be done with it
in a couple years. And then I will do my own thing.
After,
I will write a book that will become.
Yeah, after the non-disclosure expires, I will do a tell-all about what I really thought about the situation. And so I don't know.
Yeah.
It just depends.
I mean, that's the epitome of selling out, right? But
there
is a number. There is a number.
Yeah. Like, I never believe someone that says that they're just never going to sell out. Like, it's just a matter of the number in the check. So you know that about me going forward.
Uh-huh. So does the audience.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm talking to the people out there. Also, what happened to the Personal Arrogance spinoff show? Personal Arrogance guys are still noodling on it. We talked a little bit about that in Seattle, but
it's not going to be what we kind of hinted it would be.
No,
certainly.
And it's not going to be, I don't think it's ever going to be an Eric Jesse all the time show again.
Yeah, he's too busy. Jesse's too busy. For
the foreseeable future, years, he's going to be wrapped up in this other thing he's doing, which I'm happy for and successful. But there's a potential. I don't know, because there's a couple of other questions that kind of tie into this.
Yeah, next one.
Let's move on. Frack and T, here's a question. You get an email from the Nerdist or Popcorn Talk or Earwolf or one of the big podcast companies. They want to buy Bald Move and have you keep making the show or work for them. You no longer have to worry about funding the empire, but you don't own it anymore. And now your boss is Chris Hardwick.
Oh, God.
Do you take the deal?
My boss is Chris Hardwick?
Has Chris Hardwick heard all the shit we talk about him? Because I'd have to know that.
Yeah. Is he going to go back and listen to our back catalog?
Yeah.
Has he already heard it? So here's the thing. It depends on the contract for me, because I would do that. So my ideal scenario, if Bald Move is sold, is I work for another company under a contract for a few years until they're able to get a stable of podcasters to replace me, and then I'm done.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to work for somebody forever.
Yeah.
That's not what I want.
Okay.
So that would be my stipulation, right? Like, okay, I'm going to sign this 3-year contract. I will continue to produce content until that 3 years. So figure it the fuck out. Figure out how to replace me.
And at the end, maybe you contract again, but you don't want an open 10-year contract to do the Bald Move show brought to you
about
by the
Nerdist. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you just never know. What if it's hell on earth?
Yeah.
And you're stuck. Like, that's the thing. Like, Hollywood contracts are fucking contracts, man.
Yeah. Yeah. They will sue you over that shit.
Both ways. Like, you know, Adam Carolla got paid like $8 million to sit on his ass for 2 years and do podcasting.
I'll take that
because
contract.
Because CBS. But also, if you're in a show that you hate with creative people you hate and people are trying to stifle you and keep you down, you're kind of stuck there too. So,
Yeah. So the answer is, hell yeah, I'd sell Bald Move if the number is right and if there's a plan for the future. If it's not just like, yeah, you'll just keep doing this forever for us. Because
yeah.
the best part about this, frankly, has been working for myself. I don't have... We can do whatever we want, right? Like, there's no higher power to say, oh, no, you can't charge $1 a month for your club. That's too little. You got to charge $5. There's nobody to say, oh, yeah, you have to cover this bullshit show that we know you're going to hate.
Yeah.
Fuck that.
The show about the naked lady tattoos that shows up in Central Park, it's going to be hot. NBC's paying us $10 million for a podcast. You guys get to do it.
The Batman show without Batman. It's going to be amazing. No, fuck off. We're not covering that.
That was actually on Bald Move briefly.
I know, but not us.
Dante did... Speak for yourself. I did two of those shows.
Yeah, not me.
Dante Danger, what is it about your show and podcasting style that makes people listen to you? You can answer, I don't know, and that's fine. I'd be interested to hear your perspectives on what you think makes you guys successful, if that's how you feel you are at podcasting. Quote unquote successful.
Yeah.
He says, the reason I ask this is I find your skits hilarious, but I also know how hard it is to know that something is hilarious when you play it out. But you guys seem to know what is funny and invent new ways of making it funny.
So the first question, I think what makes us successful at podcasting, a couple of the things that we kind of had as principles from the beginning is we talk about the show. Mm-hmm. We don't go off on tangents all that often.
Yeah.
It's very rare that we get off topic. Obviously, you know, we've been friends forever and that's been something we've talked about before. We have good chemistry and we're consistent. Like those are the three big things that I think have made us successful.
Yeah, I mean, that's when I started doing this, it was, you know, Bald Move was not a money-making operation. It was a way for us to kind of keep in touch when you went to Chicago.
Yeah.
And I was busy at the time. I was the director of IT for this big company. And so, like, I've always been busy. I've been busy ever since I've been an adult. It's kind of like a disease of mine. I say pathologically overbooked. But I have to, like, schedule my fun. And that was the thing. I was like, I believe on doing this professionally, even though it's kind of a joke and we have fun and everything. Like if we say we're going to do something this weekend, then by God, we're going to do it.
Yep.
And we have to keep that schedule. And you and I, you know, had very strong opinions about podcasts. Like we listen to professional and amateur ones and the ramble. Like there's a certain class of podcasts that they love hearing themselves talk and that you can get 30 minutes before you've actually heard the thing you came to hear for because they're talking about funny, quote unquote, funny stories of
and how was your week?
Yeah.
Fuck you. How was my week? Yeah. Let's talk about the topic at hand. Now,
after doing this for 4 years, like enough of our private life has slipped out that sometimes we can talk about our own personal experiences and how they impact our takes on what is like, it's very rare that we'll accept from stuff like this where this is just a navel gazing podcast.
Yeah, this is for our fans. It's not
like, I think that's kind of the key is to not waste people's time and respect that there are other shows that they can go out there. And we've also, we like podcasts, we listen to a lot of the quote unquote competition, and we've always had this philosophy is of how can people eat our lunch?
Yeah.
And how can we do that before they do it to us? But yeah, I don't know. We kind of the format that we lucked into is a blend of like what Jay and Jack were already doing plus things that we kind of believed about podcasting, and it hasn't really changed much. We play around with it from time to time, but I don't know. I honestly don't know why. We tried to get at some of that during some of our surveys.
Yeah.
And like ask like, you know, of all these reasons and like the number one, like 87% response was we just like Jim and Aaron and want to see them succeed. And that's gratifying and it feels good.
It's amazing. But why?
It's not general, like something you can be actionable other than try to be good.
Yourself.
We try
right?
to be good. Which we like one of our core principles is we don't want to fuck anyone over.
Yeah.
Like we never want anyone to feel like, oh, this is not good value for or oh man, I wasted 2 hours. These guys phoned it in.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't
And I mean that goes toward like you know, his question about how we know what's funny and if we think it's funny when we're making it and all this stuff.
We don't.
We don't know what's funny to you guys. We know what's funny to us, right? Yeah. And then we make that thing.
Like, if we're cracking up making it, it's dangerous, though, because every single time we make something that we think is funny, by the time we get it produced,
yeah,
we're like, is this still funny?
I don't know if it's funny anymore.
I just heard it six times with, like, minor variations, and I'm not laughing anymore. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how Key and Peele do it. Like, they take it from, like, okay, we're super high, and we had this crazy idea. Now we spent $100,000 making the sets and making it in reality, and we've edited it, and we've done the voices. How do you do that? I don't know.
It's
like, I would die. I would die of shame and like, oh, this is terrible. We got to start all over.
I think so. It ties into the idea that we're not good at these big projects, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we take kind of bite-sized chunks of stuff. We do these 2-minute skits, these 3-minute skits, whatever. And we put that out there because that's the amount of time we can spend on something before questioning ourselves.
Yeah.
And going, oh God, this is never going to work. Yeah. Abort, abort.
TV is great from the forum says, have either of you had a Jehovah's Witness come to your door as a missionary since you left the organization? And how did you react that they did? I had one come by my place last week and I just politely listened to the spiel for about 5 minutes, took the pamphlet, threw it in the trash as soon as they left. Have you, Jim?
No, I've never had a witness come by my house.
I have several times and it's always been when my son is there, which is a very awkward.
You think they're following you?
No, it's all done, you know. It's just when he's there, like if someone knocks my door at 9:30, I'm probably not going to answer.
Yeah.
Like, fuck you for coming here tonight. Like, maybe if you knocked like a sheriff would.
Or if I know I have a package coming or something.
Or it's the police. Okay, fine, I'll open the door. But if I'm just hearing this like measly little like,
yeah,
you know, nah, I'm not going to answer the door. Also, like, they've been setting up beside this kiosk outside the Sam's Club. And then
kiosk?
Yeah, right outside the exit. Sam's Club's let them set up this Jehovah's Witness kiosk.
Oh, I heard somebody talking about
it. It was me.
Something like that.
And
it's
starting to be
it's
going to be showdown at the OK Corral one of these days because I fucking no. Like I've got warring Nate. I'm angry at these people and I want to tell them how what a bunch of deluded idiots they are.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, that doesn't help them. Like outright attacking them just hardens the mental shell that they put it in. So I think a lot about what you can do to say something that would get them to think, but also not attack them. And I haven't come up with a good one.
Can I just say that's the laziest of all Jehovah's Witness moves?
What's that?
Posting up outside of Sam's Club. Fuck you, man. Jesus didn't post up outside of a Sam's Club. He went door to fucking door. That's what I want to see. Yeah. That's always been the motto. I had to do that shit.
No one's home, though. It's not very effective.
It's true.
But I don't know that this quote unquote street witnessing is worth it either.
Yeah.
So I would say that if you don't want him to call back, there's actually this little backdoor thing where you can say, don't put me on your do not call list.
Sure.
And that
or just have a big scary dog.
That some witnesses get off on.
That's true.
Like, yeah. Oh, this is
have a bunch of guns.
This is the scary shack in the country with a bunch of do not trespassing and like I love guns and
come to your door with a
my
gun.
My security no system is a Smith and Wesson and they like, oh, that's not me. That's door to door salesman. I've got God's word that I'm bringing. Like some of the witnesses, like they're martyrs, man. They would like nothing more than your bullet to split their skull so they wake up in paradise. I would just be kind, and if I ever think of something that you can throw at them that would throw them off guard, I'd let you know. But they practice.
Come to the door naked.
Every week, that's you might not know this, but the part of their meetings every week is practicing this shit.
Oh, I know.
Well, you know this. I'm talking, again, this is me talking to the listeners. They get up on their stage, and they it's an assignment that you hand out to one of the brothers and sisters, and they practice like it's a door, and they practice in front of the audience like, common objections.
Here's
like I'm busy or I don't believe in God or you guys are a bunch of shit or I heard you were a cult, and they practice on what to say and then they're critiqued on that practice. They're pretty good at it. It's not something you can just go in unprepared and win an argument with a Jehovah's Witness.
No, you'll never win an argument. Most of them have canned responses for things. They're basically apologists for the most part. Some of them have actually thought about this stuff and are kind of like, you know, biblical scholars in a way. But very few and far between there.
Michael G says, where do you guys see Bald Move in 10 years?
Dead. Done. Over.
In
no.
the gutter. So I got some thoughts on this. So
I see like there's a few ways we could go.
Because I think yours. The biggest hurdle Bald Move will have to overcome is eventually you're going to want to move on, at the very least geographically. Because I know
I would have already done it. Honestly.
You hate the Midwest and you want out, and I don't blame you. If it wasn't for my 9-year-old tying me here, I would not that I hate the Midwest, but I'd much rather live in a Seattle or a San Diego.
Even a Chicago, frankly.
A Chicago.
Like, love to go up there.
Where there's something a little bit more going on, and I don't have family that's really tying me here.
I do feel shackled here by your presence here, by your shackling.
We're shackled together. The second biggest hurdle is eventually we're going to have to find a way to bring 2 to 4 other people into the empire that you guys are going to hopefully love as much as us, because that's the only way I think we're going to become the empire in the true sense of the word. Like, like Giant Bomb. If it was just Jeff Gerstmann and the guy who died.
Ryan.
Well, Ryan died. Like, Giant Bomb would be gone.
They'd be done.
Yeah. But they brought in people that... into the fold, and Jeff and Ryan were involved in these guys, and the fans got to know them as much and like them as much as everybody else, and now they're able to cover a lot more of these games and a lot more geography. And
I would like to think if Bald Move did that, it would not just be a pack of straight white guys, but
sure,
but maybe a little more diversity in that pack, but
if I had my dream, I'd like I'd get like Jesse and Eric.
Okay, that.
But then start looking. But that's the people I know. I mean, like,
they do the same thing, right? They're not setting out to hire straight white guys. It's like,
yeah, that's
it's the gaming industry, and that's who works in it mostly.
But
and
once
we know
you got beyond
people.
That, you'd start looking at like, we need other voices. Like, I like having the women on for. I like having Cecily on when you do her podcasts. I like having the women that do the Orange is the New Black, because that's a perspective you need. But I think you need more of those perspectives so you can have. Entertainment that appeals to everybody and everyone's point of view gets expressed.
And most importantly for me is that kind of unshackles us, right? Like if we could find another me, somebody who doesn't have the commitments and the responsibilities tied to this geographic location, we might be able to arrange something where multiple locations would work for Baltimore.
Yeah, have an East Coast branch, Midwest branch.
Right now, it's not possible. So, I mean, that's one of the things I would be looking for in someone.
And honestly, that's the thing. Like, if we started making money that's extra self-sufficient, we'd be looking at, okay, now can we bring in a third voice? And also, I think that it would be nice to have a crew that has stake in it, because I think that, you know, like we talked about, sometimes we butt heads at the 50-50. Having other people's voices in here would help us, I think, resolve some of that.
I think so. Yeah.
You know, because you can't get outside your own perspective.
Yeah. Saying, oh, you're not seeing this. Or,
yeah.
You're not
or
seeing
like,
that.
That guy makes a lot of sense. Or, you know, and then, I don't know, maybe one guy will feel ganged up or railroaded. That would be probably the downside of that.
Yeah, maybe.
But I think in the next 10 years, I would like to see, you know, 6 to 8 people involved with Bald Move, and not just like, you know, like Kelly and Tom. I love their show. I'm glad they're on it, but we have very little day-to-day involvement with those because of the geography and the difference in focus and stuff. But we need to bring like those people that we actually have some kind of close geographical thing. We can bring them into the studio and we can divvy up shows, and it'll be like you and somebody and doing a show and me and somebody, and hopefully that you'll like those people as much as you like me and Jim together.
Creating content around all of us that,
you
know, we can kind of, because you have to introduce them gradually otherwise.
Because right now it's like, it already, like, you know, we have to make decisions about what not just because it's not good or not. We have to make decisions based on how much time we got.
Yeah.
And interests, like some things I would love to cover, but Jim doesn't give a shit about, vice versa. Mm-hmm. So,
the other thing is maybe partnerships with like bigger media outlets, I think would be cool. Kind of get our voices out there a little bit more.
How so?
In kind of these bigger avenues, you know, like I could see potential partners with Netflix or something like that, where we're talking about the shows they produce and that's being released alongside the episodes as a commentary track or something like that. Those types of things, you know, developing some content for some what I consider major media outlets.
Hmm.
Something like that.
You ready for the next question?
Yeah.
Tristan, of all the TV and film you've covered, which character reminds you most of your co-host? So Aaron answers for Jim, and Jim answers for Aaron. This is tough because, and I'm not saying this just to build on the fact that you're an alien psychology, I've never come across a person on television that I'm think, oh, that's Jim.
I haven't either.
I have in my, I've come across a lot of people that remind me of other people that I know. And like, oh, yes, okay, that guy's Ass Cheek, or oh, that guy's Peter, or oh, that guy is Ace Jace, or even like April from Parks and Rec is essentially my girlfriend. She's not quite as weird as that.
You're right.
But she's got the same sensibility and kind of like reaction.
Does that make you crazy? What's his name?
I'm not as stupid as Andy, but no, yeah, of course not. I'm kind of a bit of a clown. but so
I couldn't. I tried thinking about this. I couldn't come up with anything.
I feel like it's cop out, but you just are like you're not.
I have a little bit of Mr. Robot in me, like a small amount of like antisocial.
But you're not that.
I'm not the sociopath.
You're not that far on the spectrum.
Exactly, yeah.
But you are kind of, I mean, the same kind of like, I don't know that I know what goes on in your head. You keep your own kind of like,
I'm a pretty private person.
Your emotional mental state is kind of like yours alone, and you don't really care if.
I feel like I come across as just kind of the, you know, if you were looking at my personality and a heart rate monitor, it's just your standard heart rate at all times. Like occasionally there's a blip and you go, what was that? Is he dying?
Yeah.
Oh no, it was just he had a bad move in Axis Now.
All right, so sorry that was kind of a fizzle,
kind of
a
bust,
just too unique, not out of central casting. Hatorian, what movie or TV show would you force your worst enemy to watch over and over again?
Oh, I've got a good one for this.
Dragon Ball Z.
God Christ, I hate you.
Is that what
Am I your worst enemy? No. But I hate that fucking show.
No, I mean,
it's the worst. It's 90 minutes of powering and grunting up and 4 seconds of action.
That or the Power Rangers? Because I watched some Saturday morning while I was cooking breakfast. The first Power Rangers movie was on HBO Family. And I'm like, this is the fucking worst. This is the devil. And like, at least the first season had the cute pink ranger that you could kind of, you know, because my brother loved the Power Rangers.
I was just a fan.
He wasn't allowed to admit. So this is we'll get the little loophole we have later. But yeah, he loved it and I hated it. But at least I could watch, what's her name? Amy Jo Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
She still holds up too.
Of course you know that.
Because she shows up like halfway through the
Who hasn't movie. Looked her up on the internet?
Still looks good too. Still a fine looking woman. Because right. I started like, where are they now? And like some like the green Tommy's an MMA fighter. He's got a shaved
Which
head
was the Green Ranger?
Tattoos.
Not the Science Ranger, right?
No. He could be started off.
Oh, long hair Tommy. Yeah.
Yes, that guy.
Tommy.
He looks like an MMA.
Zach
version.
Was the blue one, right? Zach. He the was the Science guy? Ranger. Yeah.
Yeah, and the Black Ranger was the black guy.
The black, yeah, the Black Ranger. Sure.
Those are stuff like that's just shitty. Like just you'd be doomed to watch over and over again.
I've got what I think is an interesting answer.
Okay.
Something that sounds good on the surface, but I think would drive you insane after a while.
All right.
Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
That how meta is that?
We thought about doing for a stunt a 24-hour Groundhog Day marathon on Groundhog Day sometime. I'm not saying we won't, but you know our friend Peter did that. I think he
did
made
what?
It through four times.
Oh,
he was
yeah.
sick one day and he stayed home and he told us about it. What a surreal experience it was watching that movie over and over and over again.
That's what I'm thinking. Like if you're forced to watch that movie over and over, it's good the first
it's a great
100
movie.
Times you see it.
Oof.
What about the next 1,000 times you
it
see it?
It is pretty meta. That's a good one.
Okay.
Tony, this one's for Aaron. Just how sexy is Benicio del Toro?
Not at all. My God.
He's so sexy, Jim.
Oh, his fucked up face, man.
His stormy gaze promises a steamy sea of Latin love. He smells like Skittles and Milk Duds. He just so sexy. So sexy.
I don't see it.
Hatorian, are we going to get a Baldies this year? The Bald Move Awards. I vaguely remember discussion on that and think it would be a cool end of the year thing to do. Either you nominate and open it up to vote, or you guys simply provide your winners.
Interesting idea.
That's actually underway. We're recording the entire process this time.
Yep.
And we are going to involve the fans at some point, probably in the next month.
Yeah, we already recorded a video that is kind of the construction of the awards.
Yeah, like us deciding what categories we wanted, mm-hmm. and debating
how the
that.
Format we're going to do this in. Yeah.
Yep. So that's definitely going to happen and probably be an annual thing.
Yeah.
I think it's Jazz. I think it's actually Jasmine, but it's AJ's.
Oh, Ace Jace.
What's the meanest email you've ever received?
You know, I try not to remember these. Yeah. I try not to keep these things with me because it only brings you down.
The ones that stick out in me is like every once in a while I'll get an email that I guess they think only I read them, but it's like an incredibly vicious take of you.
Yeah,
as a person,
and I've seen those,
and they've come in the other way too, where it's like, but like the ones that stick with it are ones that like really come at you like you're some fucking mouth breathing idiot, and I take umbrage at that because you're my friend, like sure. way more personal than I get with someone saying that like you can't talk and you mispronounce things funny and you know.
So the thing is, I'm not good with on the fly debates at all, and we occasionally have those. Over different points of view. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, yeah, I kind of feel like I get the short end of the stick every time because I'm not able to think as quickly as you are on this stuff.
And then you beat my ass in Rocket League and everything's fine.
And express myself as eloquently as you do. I can pronounce things, but...
There you go. You sound more eloquent.
So, and I feel like most of the times when this happens is I've had something bad going on in my life, and like people don't realize that, right?
Sure.
Like they think, oh, week in and week out, gym are always going to be the same. Well, guess what? We're real fucking people. We have bad days. We don't give a shit about the show for a week because something else has gone bad in our lives, and yeah. It's like, well, yeah, I didn't pay attention like I should have here because mm-hmm. you know other stuff is going on.
Sure.
But I understand why people don't see that part of it, right?
Yeah.
It's a show to them.
Well, and we don't talk about it.
Same. Yeah. Yeah, so those are mostly the things that stick with me is like the personal attacks, I guess.
Uh-huh. And that's like, I also think like...
But you can't let it stick with you because you'll eat yourself up with it.
Yeah, and I know I take like shots at people. You know, I like to make fun of the Gimples and the Mazeras and whatnot of the world, but I don't make it like you're a terrible person and you should die or you're stupid. It's more like, you know, professionally, you've got some shortcomings here and... You know, I don't know.
We're not always so diplomatic because ultimately we're entertaining people, right?
Right.
And hyperbole goes a long way toward entertainment.
Right. And like, it's like, I think that if someone did a podcast on the Bald Move podcast and they like made fun of us in that capacity, I would actually think it was really entertaining.
Probably. Yeah.
But like sending up, like it's the difference between that and getting a personal letter in a mail saying you should die.
sure.
And especially when it's about your friend, that's where it's like, you're right, I don't remember a lot that run at me personally, but when people like talk shit about you, it bothers me.
Like I said, I think you're able to think more quickly on your feet than I can. The other thing is, you know what, let these fuckers get on the mic for hundreds of hours.
Yes.
Talk about something that may or may not be important to them at the moment.
Yes.
And see how they fare.
Yes.
Everybody's going to fuck up.
It's harder than you think.
Come on.
Broom Person said, is going to the Walking Dead cons and hosting discussions and meeting actors and such forth awkward, you know, since you guys are self-proclaimed haters? Nah, because they don't know us from Adam.
Exactly.
I heard tell that some of the producers of The Walking Dead are a bit thin-skinned about the different podcasters.
Yeah.
But, like, we're the one of the bigger, quote-unquote, hater cast of all, and I've never gotten blackballed. We still get invites. We're just too poor to take them up on it now.
Sure.
Yeah. But
I never feel awkward because I know that they have no fucking clue who I am.
The only awkward thing I ever had was when I interviewed Gwendolyn Christie. I asked her a question that I was wanting her to talk about her kind of stance on feminism, but she had just had an interview that she was taken out of context and she had a whole bunch of people up her ass about her, how she's not being a good feminist and a role model. And like, I can't even imagine what it's like to be her where like you are, you know... You're playing this tough woman, and now you are the spokesperson for everyone with the double X chromosome.
De facto, yeah.
And like you say this thing, and then like the 30-second soundbite that makes it into it makes you sound like maybe you're an anti-feminist or whatever. And she was kind of like, I thought I pissed her off, and I was really worried that I'd lose her for the rest of the interview because she felt defensive and kind of bristled at that. And I'm like, oh, Jesus. But we talked about it afterwards, and she explained, she's like, I didn't know where you were going with that. And I just gotten in this big old kerfluffle. So, but no, like everything's been like, they don't know. They don't have time to listen to their podcasts. That's the thing.
And we don't talk to them long enough to ever bring that shit up, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, hey, how are you? Sign this thing for me.
I would fucking love it if Andrew Lincoln would come up and be like, you're the one that makes fun of my shitty Southern accent. And we'd probably have a good laugh over it.
Probably so.
So.
Yeah.
He seems like a cool dude.
Because you could at least say, well, you're the best thing on that show. So yeah. What do you want?
Josh K says, I've always wondered if people who make the TV shows ever hear or comment on your cast without giving away your sources. What, if any, industry responses have you gotten? Not a lot. We did. None, I did really, talk to the editor on the Mad Men, and he said that the Wiener was aware of our podcast, and he actually he didn't listen to it, but people had brought some theories and stuff that we were talking about that he found very amusing.
That's the only time I can think.
Yeah,
we talked to one of the writers on Justified. Producers on Justified.
Yeah, writer, executive producer. Taylor he's Elmore. Both.
Yeah, no, yeah. I always confuse
Elmore Leonard, Taylor Elmore.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so, I mean, we do have some elbow brushing with those guys, but very little especially compared to other podcasts.
Yeah,
it's like, nah.
He said also someone on the Facebook this evening said that your podcast is the main fear, The Walking Dead attraction, actual show is a companion piece. And I agree. I'm not sure I would have kept up with either of that, your skits and commentary. Does that make you feel happy or sad?
I mean, it's awesome that people like us that much. I wish the show were better. So it's kind of both. Like that, it blows me away that anybody would just watch a show or just listen to our podcast.
I've done that though. Back, like, I was a Television Without Pity fan, and there's a couple shows I stopped watching, but I kept reading their recaps because I knew enough about the setting and situation, and they were in depth enough in their recaps that I loved them making fun of it.
Gotcha.
So I can understand why people would do that. And I'm glad. So, yeah. I'm glad that, like, yeah, if that makes people happy, then great. He's got a couple other. I'm not sure if this is him or I accidentally clipped his name off or what. But they want to know what our favorite Reddit thread of all time is and why. He personally loves this one about workout, where as a thread on 100 push-ups started, and then like Reddit does, they kept playing like a telephone game with the premise of the thread and this long comment chain until it became about eating McDonald's hamburgers and then about eating bench press machine. It was crazy. And I actually came in as blind and chuckled and read it. I don't have one, honestly.
I don't visit Reddit enough to.
My favorite thing to ever happened was on the Destiny subreddit the day that Xur sold the Gjallarhorn, which was the year one exotic everybody wanted. Yeah. And the mods, which rule this community of like 250,000, 300,000 gamers with an iron fist, because they have to, said, you know what? This is now Boom Boom Wolfpack Pew Pew Day, and we are just completely shit post, low effort post, everything encouraging. And it actually turned out to be like, it was hilarious. Like, people trying to do the worst, shittiest post.
Yeah, yeah.
Was hilarious. And it's the whole day. And they fucked up the CSS of it and made it all like rain gout. It was crazy. It's pretty funny.
Nice.
Finally, he talks about his love of audiobooks and listening to World War Z and our recommendation. How much interest is there be from you or the audience for a virtual audio book club? It'd be cool to pick one genre book every month or so. We all listen, then give your take with our feedback. What might even be cool from a business standpoint is hopefully Audible would throw some love your way. Even for people like me who are already members, but have downloaded at least one book on your recommendation. Any interest in a book club from you?
You know, it would be super cool to get like, do you know about these Steam accounts, like these review Steam accounts where like all of the games are unlocked? Just like very few people have them. It was mostly games journalists like back in the day when Steam launched.
Okay.
Got these accounts where just everything past, present, future is unlocked.
Okay.
You can play it all. I think it'd be sweet to get that from Audible. I would love that. They would throw that our way to do a book club podcast. It'd be great. And yeah, I kind of am interested in that because I've been trying to read a little bit more lately because I realized over the past like 10 years, I haven't read hardly anything. Audiobooks aren't really reading, but they're about as close as I'm going to get on a regular basis. If I could start listening to those instead of podcasts, that'd be cool.
Yeah, I'd
almost rather do a regular book club.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think you could do either or. You could, like, if you want to read it.
Okay.
Like, I'm not going to shut out people that read it. You know?
Oh, you didn't listen? No, no.
Fuck you,
you didn't
man.
Hear Roger Daughtry's amazing voice in this. Sorry. Yeah, yeah.
You can't fairly appreciate this. I kind of interested. So I'm rereading Patrick O'Brien, Speak of the Devil.
Yep, yep.
And I thought about having a book club, and this might even be bigger than, like, wider than Bald Move, but I thought about, like, doing a chapter a week discussion of the entire series as a podcast. And
that would take a long time.
It would take most of the books are 12 to 20 chapters, and there's 20 of them. So, yes, okay.
It would take a very long time.
It'd take a very long time.
Like, 10 years? No, no,
five
less
to
than 10, 10 years.
Five years. Somewhere like a five. It'd be a five-year mission. These are the voyages of the HMS Surprise.
I think it'd be cool. I'd be in on something, but it would have to be quicker than that. Like, I wouldn't want to spend 5 years on a single series of books if I wasn't interested necessarily in the subject.
And I don't know if it will work as a weekly or a bi-weekly, but I was kicking around that because I would like to do something like that because I do love reading. But we thought about having one as a forum-based one.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to suggest if there are a bunch of people out there who are interested in this, they should let us know on the forums or something.
Yeah.
Maybe in this Q&A thread.
Yeah, there's an other media thread that would be great for this. Or there might even be a books forum. Hell, I don't know. I only created it.
Did you skip a question about books?
No, that was just a book question.
From Stephen S.
From Steve. What is it?
He asks about some of the fiction and nonfiction books.
Oh, no. I moved that around.
You moved it. Okay,
I moved that down to better group with another question. Jenny said, congratulations, and I really like time travel movies. If you could go back in time, what time period would you travel back to and why?
Christ, where is this one? I've lost.
I just moved the one question, I swear to God.
Okay. I couldn't come up with anything, man. Like, I'm not going back to the 80s. I was born in the 80s.
Oh,
I know what the 80s
are
like.
I'm
not going back to prehistoric times because I'd die immediately.
That's the
I'm not
thing.
Going back to the Old West because I'd die immediately.
Like, that's the thing. Like,
I feel like there's never been a better era.
Yeah, I would be more interested in jumping forward 200 years.
Me too.
Although you run the risk of an irradiated wasteland of bullshit where everything's dead.
But if you're going to go in the past and die immediately anyway, why not? Go forward and take your chances.
If I had a gun to my head, I'd probably say 18th century Age of Sail, because I find that where people were still actively discovering things. But like you could go find islands and birds and trees that no one's ever seen before and get into, you know, like the world was still a big enough place that traveling it was interesting. But you also had the beginnings of modern
You know what would be really cool?
There was some medicine and, you know, they had laudanum. So, like, if you had to get your arm amputated, it wouldn't be a terrible thing. At least you wouldn't remember it.
Now, I feel like I'd probably die pretty quickly, but I think, like, going back to the construction of some great cities would be really cool. Mm. Like, seeing them as they were in their most vibrant, non-touristy, like, native states.
Yeah.
I think, like, if you go back to, like, Rome... during the time when Rome was a significant power.
Yeah.
Be so interesting to see that.
And where would you want, I mean, because that's a huge period of time. Like, do you want to see the founding of Rome?
Right.
Or do you want to see Rome in its glory? And then how do you define Rome in its glory?
I want to see Rome
the Republic,
when
it was imperial?
All good questions. And I don't know the answer to that. Huh. But I would want to see some of these great cities, like Paris. What did Paris look like? When it was kind of at its height, you know, when it wasn't the tourist spot that it's become now, which I guess you wouldn't have to go that far back for that, honestly. A few hundred years?
Sure.
Three, four.
When did the Eiffel Tower get built?
400.
Is that right before the Eiffel Tower was built?
I mean,
it's pretty fucking touristy, the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah. Brought a lot of people.
The Arc de Triomphe. Got to go pre-Napoleon. What are we wanting? When it was just a shithole farm town?
No, that's too far back.
Post-catacombs.
Oh, yeah.
Post-catacombs, pre-Eiffel Tower.
Hell yes.
Nailed it. All right, there you go. Fern wants to double dip on this. What were your favorite cartoons growing up? Maybe your top five. I know growing up, one of these suggestions, Dragon Ball Z, not one of them.
Fuck, no.
I know growing up, you were banned from watching certain cartoons, so I'm curious as to what you did see and what you took risks to see because you loved the cartoons. So here's how it worked. When I was about 13, 12 to 13, my mom had to go back to work, which left me in charge from 3 o'clock until 5:30, 6 o'clock, which meant...
Being the eldest.
I was able to make decisions on what we watched and what we didn't watch. And I was fairly generous in the allowance, especially if they would like, if I, you can watch fucking Power Rangers if I can watch Gargoyles. But right. I will say that the Disney afternoon was a mainstay.
Oh,
you can't go wrong with DuckTales, Darkwing Duck, Rescue Rangers, Tailspin. Are you kidding? Gargoyles.
So three of those are on my list.
I wonder if Gargoyles still holds up. I've wanted to go and find like a Blu-ray to see if that series holds up like I think. Because I almost put it on like Batman the Animated Series tier of pre-adolescent television. Like that Batman the Animated Series is better than it had any right to be.
Yeah. So I had a list. I don't know if it's like the age difference here or what, but I had a list.
Well, sure. We were like 4 or 5 years apart.
And I feel like a lot of stuff I may have been slightly too old for while watching.
Same.
Of it too young. I don't know. But
because a 12-year-old, I don't think DuckTales is your primary, but I still thought it was, there was enough.
Oh, I think it is.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like once your balls dry, like 13, you're supposed to be on to slightly more mature things.
I don't know. I love DuckTales. And I mean, DuckTales ran for what, 4 years?
A long time.
In the late 80s?
A long time.
Yeah. That Disney afternoon, though, you're right. It was killer.
But the other thing is that I also had some exceptions. Like my mom, she was down on magic and violence, but there's a sci-fi exception, the Star Wars exception, the Star Trek exception. So I made full use of that. Like Bionic 6 is a really cool art show that had like an action figure line that I quite enjoyed. Silverhawks, which are these cybernetic space police dudes that somehow could fucking summon wings from their arms and fly in outer space.
Never even heard of
that. Mask, Mobile Armored Strike Command.
I didn't watch any of these.
Yeah. Transformers, I think she let me watch for a while until it got too violent because it was... And I can remember, they're just robots killing each other. Yeah. Is this even violence?
Yeah.
When they said that Jehovah hates those with the soul of violence, I don't think he's talking about robot on robot. Like, what does that even mean? Is chess violent? Like, what? Yeah.
Would she let you
watch? I used to get in debates with some of the elders because they'd get pissed. Bots? They'd get pissed at like us playing VGA Planets because it's this galactic. And I'm like,
it's
okay,
about war.
Is chess too violent? Because you're trying to kill this king. Is checkers too violent?
Is it competition?
Where
that
does
you
it
don't
stop?
Like?
Like, no, it's just stuff. You're old man, and you don't understand this stuff, and that's why you don't like it.
Yeah. Ugh. No, but I feel like most people my age would answer, you know, the staples: Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, GI Joe, Transformers. Couldn't watch any of that shit.
Yep.
So my list, as I have it written here, is DuckTales, Rescue Rangers. Forgot about Darkwing Duck. That should have been on the list. Super Mario Brothers Super Show, which was a
terrible
shit show, but I was so young. Sure. I was like 6, 7 years old.
Yeah.
And it was like the best thing ever because I loved Mario
That's
Brothers.
On Netflix. My 5-year-old loved it.
Right? Because if you love Mario Brothers, you're going to love that show.
Sure.
It's like, what? My Mario Brothers came to life? Yes.
Yeah.
And there's a cartoon that's just as good as the games? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Captain Lou Albano.
And then every Friday we're going to get Zelda instead.
The Zelda, I felt like, was the reward for the older sibling to put it up with the rest of the week.
Yeah. It was good.
Zelda was good.
And then I have Fraggle Rock. You remember Fraggle Rock?
I did not watch Fraggle Rock. I think I was too old.
See, I like that.
Also, that was a Nickelodeon or maybe cable.
Okay.
Because my dad refused to buy cable.
Okay, we had cable.
I didn't have cable until I was like 20, until I'd moved out.
And then the final one, Muppet Babies.
Oh, Muppet Babies
is classic.
Great.
Yeah.
The Star Wars spoof.
Uh-huh.
Still holds up.
It's a great show, even if you're an adult.
Second question. Me being a New Yorker, I'm curious to know if you've been to New York, and if so, what did you think of the Big Apple?
I have been recently.
I've been 3 or 4 times, and my opinion is it's too big.
Yes, me too.
Like, it's so beyond the scale of which I'm used to human settlements. Like, Chicago's almost too big. Chicago, I think, is the Goldilocks zone of cities for me.
Yep.
Indianapolis, a little too small. Cincinnati, a little too small. Mm-hmm. New York, too big. Chicago, just right.
It's mostly about getting around the city. And I feel like Indianapolis and Chicago, or Indianapolis and Cincinnati, Chicago has it all over them, mm-hmm. just with pure public transportation.
Yeah.
New York obviously has a ton of that, and it's great. But I feel very claustrophobic after a few days in New York. Like, the city's closing in on me. Even with Central Park.
Like, Central Park's awesome. The museums are awesome.
Yeah.
I love those things about it. But actually living that city is kind of terrifying to me.
I couldn't do it.
And, like, you got to specify what borough you're talking about, too.
Sure. Like, Manhattan's very different from
Queens
versus Brooklyn.
Yeah. So, I don't know it enough to even say.
The Bronx.
Yeah.
I forget where my dad grew up. He grew up there. Somewhere around there. No, in New York City. I would never know. Not New York City. New York. People from New York are going to get all over me for that.
So here's two questions I might have put together, and it's going to be a long philosophical conversation. Jesus, this is going to be so long.
It's almost 2 hours already.
Oh, my God.
Let's keep it going.
Should we do part A? Okay, here we go.
Nope.
I've always wondered... Wait a second. Nope, I've lost my place. Shit. Stephen S. says, what are some of the fiction and nonfiction books you guys would recommend? Lay cabbaged on that and said, also, apart from TV and movies, what is the other media that shaped your worldview?
What other media is there? Video games and books. Boom.
Yeah.
Those are my two. Like, books, video games don't shape my worldview, but books do.
They don't?
I mean, slightly, in the idea that, like, what's possible with technology, but not like, oh, I saw this amazing philosophical question that made me really think in this.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Super Mario Brothers game, like.
But there's some
video games don't do that highbrow shit.
There's some of like The Last of Us and Shadows of the Colossus. I think approach that level of.
But
like,
and
if you're like a 17-year-old and you play The Last of Us, I can see that being the first time you're exposed to a story of that type, and the fact that you're in it and you're making these decisions would be extraordinarily powerful.
But I grew up in an era where video games were pure entertainment. They had no message. They barely had characters.
Sure.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
So video games didn't shape me. TV, movies, and books.
Mm-hmm. So do you want to talk about anything in particular? Because that's the thing. Like, I have no idea, like, what fiction books to read and not read, and nonfiction books.
I feel like there's a bigger question here, too, later
on. So, yeah, Lee says, to both of you, I always appreciate the nuance you bring to discussion, your take, and the philosophical questions you ask. Often hear from one of you a perspective I hadn't considered before, and it blows my mind. So thank you for doing that. I very much appreciate the thought-provoking ideas you put forward. So my question is your worldview something you actively have to cultivate or educate yourself on, or did your worldview just come out organically? If the former, where should we go to be more like Jim and Aaron? Oh,
Jesus.
This is
you don't want to do that.
This is a question that is going to have a horrifying answer or a smug, self-serving answer.
Right. I'm going to try not to be either of those. So I didn't really realize what I was doing when I was doing it. Uh-huh. Right. I got out of this religion thing and I was like, why doesn't any of this appeal to me? What am I doing? Who am I? That sort of thing. And some of the books that really kind of brought into focus what I thought about that stuff and why I don't believe it and shaped who I am are like Crisis of Conscience was a huge one, but that kind of is specific to Jehovah's Witnesses and my particular background. Another great one that I think would do anybody good is Demon Haunted World by Carl Sagan. I think if you're questioning, you know, the rationality and the supernatural stuff of the universe, that's a great one. And any of Carl Sagan's books are fantastic on that. But that's one that I read that really kind of brought into focus, okay, none of this makes sense to me, and this is why. And he's laying it all out.
Yeah.
And then stuff like 1984 and some of the fiction stuff I read by, like, I got into Dean Koontz for a long time, and Winter Moon was one of the best ones I read, but that didn't shape me. That was just like, that's a cool book, and it's scary as shit.
So I've been out like 7 years and probably 2 or 3 years before that, that I kind of figure out that this was all bullshit. And so I guess if you want to have this, you're essentially asking how to cultivate a curious worldview. And I would like, what happened is I had a deeply held worldview that I was utterly convinced was correct. And then mm-hmm. I was demonstrated that it was demonstrated to me beyond a shadow of a doubt that it was in fact wrong. And it wasn't like one of those small things where, you know, it's kind of like, I guess, going from being a Democrat to Republican. Like, you completely changed your worldview on so many things. Like, is there a higher power? What are you here on Earth for? What is your morality? What are your ethics? Mm-hmm. And I also realized, like, just how deeply ignorant I was about so many things. The good news is like, there's never been a better time to fix those things. But it takes a lot of work. Like, when I first stopped being a Jehovah's Witness, I sat down and I wrote like a 40 or 50 page Word document that said, here's everything I know about the world, specifically how it relates to God and what I think God could be based on other major world religions, what I knew about them. And if he's like this, is he worth serving? But if he's like this, then how, you know, like what, how does that inform my view of like hell and Armageddon and things like that? And then I just kept building from there. Like, I remember 1 year, it's like, I want to figure out economics. So I went and I followed a whole bunch of economics people that were on Twitter and started following them on the New York Times from all. And you can't just limit it. You have to, in fact, go and find. I need to find 2-3 conservative ones. I need to find 2 or 3 liberals. I need to find 2 or 3 kind of radical out there. And you need to just pay attention to what they're writing. And then as they make predictions and make bold statements, you have to remember that and track like which ones were right and which ones were wrong over the course of years until you can start to build your own worldview. Mm-hmm. And then another year, I was like, I want to figure out foreign policy. And you start doing the same thing. You find out where the thinkers are and people are writing opinion pieces, and you watch a bunch of political shows and you start keeping track of who says what and who's right and who's wrong over a course of time. And you then just never, and then you take deeply held fundamental beliefs and you examine them from the other side, knowing that there's only 2 possibilities. You're going to be wrong and you're going to come out from that with a more accurate understanding of the world, and that's a value, or you're going to have a stronger conviction in what you believe.
Yeah.
And then you just never stop doing that until the day you die.
Sure. So you stay curious. And I think that ties into kind of, you know, the process I was going through after getting out of the religion too, is I was really trying to figure out how to tell what's right and wrong, right? Mm. Like how to discern truth from fiction.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's also a good place to start, is that kind of fundamental layer.
Yeah.
If you can find a lot of places that talk about reason and logic and rationality, I think that gives you the tools you need to decide your opinion on a lot of things.
Yeah.
Like, does this make sense on a fundamental level?
Yeah.
What they're saying to me. And that's kind of the biggest tool that I feel like I've developed after getting out of religion.
Yeah.
That has served me. And I'm still grossly ignorant about all the things you're talking about, like economics or whatever. Uh-huh. But like on social issues, I feel like I've come a fair amount toward what I think is a good worldview, but I just don't know how to instill that sort of desire in someone else, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like on a certain level, you're either curious or you're not. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to change that in someone. If you're not curious, you don't give a shit about all this stuff.
Sure.
So
you're right.
Why are you going to go looking?
Wrong, and it's just dumb to even, it's a waste
of time. Yeah. So like you were saying, your impetus was, holy shit, this worldview
wrong
just
about everything.
Fell apart. Yeah.
What else am I wrong about?
You were kind of kicked in the ass and forced to say, well, I need to become curious because this is clearly wrong.
Mm-hmm. And there's still,
but like, I don't know, aside from a completely life-altering experience, how do you do that?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I guarantee everyone listening to this podcast is wrong, deeply wrong about something.
Including the hosts.
Including the hosts.
Yeah.
Do you want to find out what that is and fix it? If you do, then the only thing to do is to keep like questioning your assumptions and like, you know, don't always fall in line with whatever the party or whatever the popular thing is, and don't be too quick to abandon your viewpoint, but also don't, when you start feeling that cognitive dissonance, like, pay attention to when you feel cognitive dissonance. That's the feeling that this material I'm hearing is not right. Like, you get an angry or a frustrated or a stubborn reaction. Pay attention when you get those things and follow them and see where they go.
Yeah, and ask the question, why do I feel the way I feel?
Yeah.
I feel like that's super important, too.
But, yeah, I mean, it's keeping yourself educated is tough. And, you know, there's a lot of great things. Like,
And you can't know it all is the other problem,
but
right?
But you can, like, you know, what, like if you're on Reddit, like, prune your front page, get rid of gaming and, you know, what the fuck and pics, and, like, go ask.
Oh, yeah.
Go with Ask Science and
Ask Science?
Ask Science. Oh. I've learned so much from Ask Science. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And science and.
You know what I don't like, though? I don't like the snippets, the science snippets. Like, here's an interesting fact about science, because it doesn't factor into my overall, like, understanding of science.
That's why I like Ask Science, because it's a question someone's asking, and then you have, like, verified biologists and physicists and mathematics,
okay.
And then you have conversations between those people.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, like, it's, I mean,
I like
other than
hanging
out at MIT or Caltech or Stanford, I don't know where else you get to see those conversations take place.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, like, but it's a lot of work, and it's frustrating, and you always feel like you're wrong or you're missing something. So you have to kind of get comfortable sure. with that feeling, as well. Shall we move on?
Yeah.
Shum asks, as a former full-time missionary for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, AKA Mormons, we had a bit of a rivalry with the Jehovah's Witnesses. I believe I once referred to them as Satan's version of our church. I also remember on several occasions picking a street to knock doors on, only to find the J-Dubs had just been there. Mm. God damn it.
They're always up so early, beating you to the punch.
Mm. Yeah, we're up knocking on doors for you guys to get on your bikes. what do you guys remember the general attitude being towards Mormon missionaries and Mormons in general when you're still in the Jehovah's Witness clutches?
Same as every other religion, just wrong.
Yeah, like, but I actually had a professional respect.
Okay.
Because, like, yeah, you guys knocked on doors and you got doors slammed in your faces. And in fact,
yeah, Catholics don't do that.
When I lived in the town part of Mooresville, I got quite a few Mormons, and I always would invite them in. And not like, because there's, like, a lot of times you get invited in to, as a Jehovah's Witness, to some deacon at some fun Pentecostal church. And it's like, we're going to sling scriptures at each other for an hour and no one's going to learn anything. And it's not going to, like, and I always, like, just invite him in. And, like, I try to not do anything douchey and just have a conversation and find out more about them and talk about their perspective and see what they do and
get a little more philosophical.
And some of them were cool. And some of them were just, like, wanting to stay on the script. And, but, you know, it's hot outside in the summer and you could use some iced tea, right?
Make everybody else sit in the car for an hour while
Yeah, except for the Mormons, they're always AC. Like, they always went at 2x2 and they always rode bikes and where we're from.
Backpacks and white shirts.
White shirts, black ties, and the bikes, where we're rolling deep in the witness assault vehicles. The Chevy Suburban
is
the essential witness vehicle.
Officially, it's like they're the same as everybody else, right?
Yeah.
They're part of Babylon the Great or whatever shit they're talking about.
You're Satan's version of us, sure.
Yeah. They essentially thought the same thing.
But you also got to remember that I was always a liberal witness. Jesus fucking Christ, that scared the hell out of me. I need to change this to less dramatic ringtone music.
Yeah, or turn it off or something.
What was I saying? I was always more of a liberal witness. I mean, I think the younger you are, you kind of are that way anyway. So, like, never was like, if you talk to a Mormon, your mind might get corrupted, or that's probably why I'm not a Jehovah's Witness anymore. Because I'd read books and sometimes they'd slip in the cracks. So yeah. Barry, okay, zombie apocalypse is about to happen where you are right now. And you have 24 hours head start on the rest of the world before they find out. The apocalypse conforms the Walking Dead universe rules.
Okay.
So we don't talk to each other. Under any circumstance, we say what we're really feeling or thinking or seeing. We don't share information. What's your plan of action? Where do you shack up? Who do you tell? What do you stock up on? Most importantly, other than guns, what would your close combat weapon of choice be?
Plan of action. Well, so there are a few things you need in the zombie apocalypse, right? You need food. You need weapons. I'm including water and food. And I guess you need some kind of shelter. But so, I mean, they would probably not take kindly to you going and holding up a Sam's Club 24 hours before the apocalypse starts.
But you're ready. You've got 24 hours notice that you can be ready to be the first one to
stay. So you're in the parking lot. You're waiting.
Yeah, it's like
you're waiting for them to shut down
the
lights.
When they get a new iPhone release, you know, you're ready, except for with guns.
Yeah. So I feel like, yeah, taking over somewhere that's solidly built.
Sam's Club or Costco always seems like a really good solution.
With a ton of preserved food.
Yeah.
And you're good to go.
Yeah. But you'd have to have a small army.
Yeah. So that's why you tell relatives and friends and stuff. And you, I mean, the trouble is, can you get them on board, right? Like, 24 hours from now, the world's going to go to shit. And that's the challenge, convincing them.
Also, it seems like it's hard to defend that in the sense that, like, what if someone just starts a fire on the outside of it?
Well, it's probably concrete. I don't know that it's going to do much to a Sam's Club.
Yeah, I guess so. I was just always saying, like, it seemed to be relatively easy to deny, like, even if you can't have it yourself, it's well defended, you can deny it from someone.
You probably ram trucks through the side of the Sam's Club.
Sure. See, you're already poking. Get a garbage truck and just drive right through the center block.
If you had some assholes out there, sure, yeah.
And then you would.
You would. You'd have tons of assholes.
But I don't know. Like, if you, like, so you set up shop in the Sam's Club. And I've always thought, like, Sam's Club, because they've always got the girders and stuff. Like, you could build, like, a, you know, plywood. You could set plywood across those and have, like, a treetop level. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, anyone who tries to set foot in there, you just blast.
Yeah.
And you do that a couple of times, people get to word.
And I think you could establish a perimeter around the thing where, like, we got snipers on the roof. You come to the parking lot and you're done.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to get close enough to drive a truck into it because
sure. We're
going to take you out.
Well, and you could get, like, you know, start building, you know, perimeters in the parking lot, like, just physical barriers for driving. Yeah.
I'm an apocalypse isolationist, frankly.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I'm inviting a ton of people. I'm inviting close friends and relatives.
But the problem is Sam's Clubs are in urban centers. Because the other thing is, like, my granddad's got that 150 acres down in Spencer.
That's attractive,
that nobody
too.
Knows about. It's, like, miles down a gravel road.
So long term, I feel like that's a better option, right? Because you can grow stuff.
Yes, you can
Whereas
be
Whereas a Sam's Club, you're looking at, like, can I grow something on the roof? What's going to happen here?
Well, I mean, to be frank, you're going to, like, you and 30 people could eat for years on the canned goods that Sam's Club has alone. Because you're not talking about, like, a 32-ounce can of stewed tomatoes. You're talking
family size,
a 256-ounce can of stewed tomatoes. Like, you pop That's one true. Of those up, you set it on fire, and you're eating stewed tomatoes.
Here's what you do.
And canned meats.
So your money is useless, right?
Money's useless.
So I think you, like, I don't
there's
know if
clothes
it's...
and shelter in Sam's Club. Like, there's always clothes.
So you overnight a whole bunch of stuff to yourself, right? Like a whole bunch of canned food.
Go into debt. Because you're never going
to take
out.
Yeah, use as much debt as you can. Use all your credit cards, use your savings, everything to order in overnight canned foods, weapons, whatever you can get. And then take that stuff with you to the Sam's Club. Right? Like, just fill a U-Haul truck with it or something.
Or maybe, since we got 24 hours of plan, we find out where the truck routes, the supply routes for, like, the, you know, the Sam's Club.
Yeah.
There's the semis coming in and dropping up pallets full of that shit.
Yeah.
You jack all of the semis in that 24 hour and you drive them to some, like, everyone's got their own semi that they have to flag down and jack.
And then you can use the semis as defense too, right?
Yeah.
Park them around the perimeter.
Flip those fuckers over and you got a wall.
Perfect.
All right. Now we got a plan.
We
got a plan. We just have to tap into the Sam's Club supply and command logistics depot.
Sure. It'd be pretty easy,
right? Or Costco.
Right?
It doesn't have to be
You call
Sam's
up
Club.
And you say, hey, you guys were out of stock of this. When's your next shipment come in? They tell you. They tell you right away. They want us to get a sale, right?
I don't know.
Or I'm looking for this game. When does the shipment come in?
But that wouldn't tell you about, like... Which, because the thing would suck is if you pull...
end up getting PS4s and...
Yeah, if you pull over the truck that's got loaded PS4s and baby clothes and parkas for the wind. I guess parkas would be okay.
It'd be
swimsuits.
Okay. So, yeah.
It's all swimsuits. and
swimsuits
and Wolfgang Puck branded pots and pans. That would be the worst. The worst truck to jack. All right, let's move on. Kiss My Grits.
Yeah.
Did you guys nearly come to blows over the True Detective podcast? Jim was not feeling it like Aaron was, and some of your interactions are distinctly awkward in the best possible way, of course, and I can clearly see you guys are besties, but it was funny to hear. Not really.
I mean, we just have a difference of opinion on
like we got heated sometimes. In some of the philosophy, but yeah. Not like we do on other things. Now we
those
did,
are debates, not fights, right?
We did come to not blows, but we did have some pretty intractable arguments about how to proceed with the coverage of True Detective.
Yeah.
And yeah. I don't know, we resolved it. It happened, and we were both pleased with how it came out. I don't even remember what they were. So because you're always wanting to do something like what I would consider frou-frou with the sound and format, and I'm always wanting, like, no one gives a shit about that. It's
you
the
want
information.
Meat and potatoes, yeah.
It's like anything that is not interesting content or funny content that is not being served by it being more interesting or more funny is wasted time that we don't have because we're chronically always out of time. And your position is, yes, but... If you can increase the production values in the presentation, it will enhance the information and make it more entertaining and funny. And I'm like, but I don't personally like that's
you're a guy who skips intros.
I'm the guy who like if you have a beautiful introduction with music and all this stuff, I'm like skip, skip, skip until I hear people talking. So like I literally am the worst person to have that argument with.
And I'm the guy who like. Who says, oh, well, that sets the tone for the podcast, right? Like, you need the upbeat intro if that's what you're going to do. You need the downbeat thing if you're going to have a somber conversation. I don't know. So, yeah, but, you know, our philosophical debates are just that. They're debates, right? They're not like, there's a difference between a debate and a fight or an argument.
And there's also, like, you know, I don't think you're crazy for making a statement like Russ Cole is psychotic or like the nihilism is a useless point of view to have. Like I disagree, but not to the point where like you're a mouth breathing idiot. If you think that way,
it's a difference of opinion. Yeah. I think those are valid, both valid opinions.
Also for Aaron, you're a feminist dude and I love it. Was Cecily the key driver of this or something else? Props to Cecily because she's the best. Love her on the live plays and Orange is the New Black. Well, thank you for the compliment. I would say that I was a feminist before I met Cecily. And in fact, that's probably one of the reasons we clicked. Because I imagine, you know, not being from a minority, I imagine it's interesting or it's refreshing when you meet someone that's kind of well-versed on what you go through as a struggle and what the down things are and is... you know, at least informed if they can't fully understand it. At least, you know, you don't have to explain a whole bunch of basic concepts of what it's like to be a woman. But I will say that I think, I mean, we have a lot of, you know, Cecily and I have a lot of philosophical conversations as we're watching entertainment and doing things. And she certainly helped me refine my positions on a few things. But, you know, that's one of the reasons I am a feminist, because I think... And I define feminism as the social, economic, and political equality of the sexes. I don't believe like we're trying to make women the new rulers or anything that. And I and people are like, well, why don't you call it egalitarianism? Because women have it worse than men do right now. And if you don't, if you are ignorant of the topic to the extent that you're going to advance something like white men are actually the most repressed minority in America today.
Oh my God.
There's no real place for us to start the conversation. Like you haven't done the basic Googling, the stuff we talked about being a curious person.
Yeah.
Like really Google, like find someone that doesn't agree with that and like look at their statistics and keep doing it until you believe it because it's the truth, brother. It's the truth.
Yeah. I'm a little more of a stickler for labels. And so the term feminism when used in all of its context is a little strange to me. And I think equality should be more of a goal, but But you laid out a definition of feminism that I don't think is the actual definition of feminism.
Oh my God, you're part of the problem.
I'm for the equality. It's just not like feminism is not a label that I would use particularly.
Well, I mean, that's, you know.
But I'm a stickler for labels. I think they have a definite meaning and they need to be.
Well, I would also advance that feminism context. has been demonized
for
the last 100 years, ever since the suffrage movement.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, it's never, you know, these reasonable women are asking for equality. It's these fucking harpies trying to ruin the world because their lady brains can't comprehend politics and economies. And
I don't think we disagree on many of the principles. Yeah. I think we disagree on the label, and that's. All right.
Well, my thing is, semantics, I don't have patience to debate labels with people. Sure. So it's like that's why I don't go to egalitarian. Like, no, I'm a feminist, because if you can't handle that label and you want to quibble over it, then it's like, we already need to move past that. Sure. I forget what I was saying.
I'm willing to move past that.
This is why it's so hard to be a feminist, because you get derailed on things like labels and like people that are well-meaning allies and whatnot. And I'm not a perfect one. Like, I stepped into it with Kelly a couple of times with Orange and New Black, which wasn't necessarily comfortable for me. But my position is, as a majority, it's never going to hurt me to shut up and listen to someone talk about their actual experiences without having to try to dismiss it or say why that's not true or why that's a special pleading in this case or whatnot.
Sure.
And, you know, most of my becoming a feminist has been kind of listening to women.
Yeah,
what they say about their experiences and being horrified by them.
And everybody is somewhere along a path to understanding, right? Yep. So like, maybe my sticking point is the label thing. Maybe I'm not far along enough because I still choose to label it as something that sounds better to me. But the important thing is, yeah, you're going to be wrong and you're going to step into it. You're going to make an ass of yourself every once in a while. But as long as you continue to question, like, why do I think the things that I think? What is this person's perspective? And how am I either invalidating that or making excuses for that in my own perspective and experience? I think that's something you have to continually question. And as long as you're doing that, I think you're making progress, right?
Yeah.
Like, just don't be hard-headed about this stuff. Try to understand where someone else is coming from, and I think you're on a road to being a successful human being.
Yeah, try to be empathetic.
Yeah.
Then finally she says, are you guys coming to Walker Stalker Con in London in February of next year?
There's a London Walker Stalker Con?
There is. They're taking over, man. I would love to go to London, because I think it sounds like I would love to go over the Atlantic period.
Me too.
I've never made it across the pond, but I doubt it on my podcast for salary, and they're not going to pay my way. So
we can't afford to drive 6 hours to
it's not possible. I looked it up. It turns out.
Yeah.
Google said, go fuck yourself when I tried to plot.
Oh, to drive to London.
Yeah.
Yeah. there isn't a ferry across the Atlantic.
You got the James Bond submarine car maybe, but there I don't have one of those either.
We'll drive into a cargo container.
Mm.
We'll put it on a ship, stay in there for 3 weeks while it crosses the Atlantic.
And yeah. But no, maybe one day. Flash Gordon, what have been the best and worst moments for both you and the Bald Move Adventure so far?
I think the best moment for me was probably Breaking Bad Fan Fest.
That's what I going to say too.
Like it was like just
every day, like this is
really
happening.
It's an honor to be nominated, that sort of thing. Like, yeah. I can't believe they asked us to do that. That's amazing. And like getting to meet those celebrities and kind of coordinating those panels was really cool.
Sure. Yeah.
I just felt like a big part of that.
Yeah.
You know? And that was amazing.
I just, like, as a Breaking Bad fan, I always say this.
Yeah.
Going out to Albuquerque is attainable. If you're a real Breaking Bad fan, it's super attainable and super rewarding, because they have an economy out there that will get you what you want for very reasonable. Like, what, the Breaking Bad tour is like $75 to ride on the fucking RV. And hear a guy who was involved in the production talk to you about the behind-the-scenes detail, and he'll play you the video of the location that you're visiting right now. Yeah. Like, and I feel like it's, you know, like, I'm not getting paid shit for this.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like there's going to be a Breaking Bad Fan Fest anytime soon, because it's super expensive and hard to put together. And Jenny and Miguel, my heart goes out to them for all the work that they did for it. Maybe one day. But I feel like you should go sooner rather than later, because just the way the nature of things are going to move on, like it's already changing. Like that car wash will not be there in the form it is in 5 years. Yeah. Jesse's house has already been sold and the garage has been moved. It's, you know, it's like, if you want to see those things, and like maybe Combo's Corner will have a Taco Bell on it someday.
Yeah.
It's already amazing how much the Los Pollos Hermanos thing had changed. So yeah, I would go, and I'd go now, because it's a cheap vacation and Albuquerque's fucking awesome. The food is great. The city's cool. And you can also nerd out over Breaking Bad.
Worst moments? Do we have any worst moments?
The Madverse split was bad news for me. I didn't like it. I didn't like being on the bad side of either of you guys in that negotiation, and I felt very helpless and sucky. That's probably the worst moment, the part where I was like, man, this sucks. I wanted to find a solution that made everybody happy, and there wasn't one.
I mean, honestly, most of this stuff has been super positive. Like, I struggled to come up with a really bad moment. I mean, that's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
The split there is about as bad as it's gotten. But I feel like, I don't know, another great moment is just the moment where we realized, hey, we're going to do this full time.
Mm-hmm.
That was just, it was surprising on one hand and just amazing all around.
I didn't like go back in old school. I remember like, was we were about to give up podcasting when we did Breaking Good and like the modest goals we set. And then I remember how fun it was to like, look at our downloads every day and like, oh my God, can you fucking believe how many people are downloading this thing? Yeah. Like something we looked at on a daily basis, because we were roommates at the time, and we'd be like, did you see the downloads? And we'd like, we've got instant messenger, like, oh my God, do you see how much email we've got? And like those were really cool, heady days too, before we even, I mean, that was just when we were in it for, it was cool to share our thoughts with other people.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't know. Like I said, like, other than the Madver thing, that's about it. I mean, it sucked a couple times when we thought we were going to run out of money sooner than later. But that's always like, well, we'll have to stop doing Bald Move. But I wasn't like afraid I'd lose my house or something like that, or afraid I'd get kicked out of the apartment.
Oh, here's one. It kind of sucked when we missed out on this Spotify thing, because we were supposed to be part of this Spotify launching their podcast, whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
But it turns out the way that we structured our hosting, we couldn't do that. And it kind of sucked to miss out on that, because I feel like, you know, we would have gotten a lot of attention as far as like, oh, here's part of, I mean, Spotify themselves certainly did. And I think some of the podcasts involved in that did.
Yeah.
And we might have had an opportunity there.
Yeah, we might have gotten a little bit bigger being on that part of that platform. But
yeah. But ultimately, that's not that bad.
Right.
Sucks when I lost my leg. That part when the mic fell on me and I just...
Oh, I got a leg cramp.
Right?
Been it's podcasting happening too to you long. Too. Travis says... I think we've been asked this before, but it's been a while. If you're given the ability to cover any show from the get-go, not sure whether to grant you a time machine or bring the show to you if it wasn't being made during a time when podcasts were happening. Either way, we're bending time here. What's the show? And if you if that choice is The Wire, what would be your second choice, as you have kind of discussed The Wire in this capacity in the past?
Lost.
Lost.
I think that would have been huge. Yeah.
I think the X-Files.
Would have been Donald Trump huge.
X-Files would have been potentially even bigger.
Maybe so. Yeah.
The Lost was big from a rating standpoint.
It was huge, yeah.
I just remember how crazy, like back then the internet was fucking Usenet. And I remember how crazy alt.rec.xfiles or whatever it was at the day. And that was when like the internet was really shitty and hard. And I think it would have been a great show to podcast over. And it also, we've also talked about how fun it would be to kind of like stay with a ship as it's going down. Like to just get
either
just
of those shows.
Just channel. Yep. Yeah, no, just channel the community's outrage about it and kind of ride that wave would be fun.
And also the puzzles, right? Like those shows were both kind of super mysterious and you wonder what's going on in the long term. And that would be so much fun to try and piece it all together.
Modern day, like I feel like we kind of missed a boat with Mr. Robot. That would have been good podcasting.
Yeah.
Anytime you get a show that's compelling and also has mysteries that's asking you to solve,
yep.
True Detective Season 1 would have been really good to cover, you know, as it's been released instead of retrospectively. Those are the ones I kind of come off thinking of.
All right.
Second, this is kind of stupid, but if you had could have beers with any TV character, who would it be? What do you think? I came up with Raylan Givens and Boyd Crowder.
God damn it.
But in their coal digging days.
Oh, okay.
You know, before, like, you know, when you could just go to bar and just have them kind of philosophize and go back and forth and not necessarily have the menace of them trying to kill each other.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good answer. I was going to say Raylan Givens just because I feel like the conversation would be, you know, as sporadic as I wanted it to be, yeah. Right? Like, you might sit there for 10 minutes and just sip your whiskey.
Mm.
Then, you know, strike up a 5-minute conversation, then go back to sipping whiskey. And he has a little bit of that antisocial sort of streak in him.
Mm-hmm.
Just like saying what needs to be said and leaving the rest unsaid. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I also thought Russ Cole.
Oh, Christ. He would make you think.
Like kind of like an intense, like just.
That's an entirely different conversation. Run with his
nihilism and stuff. And Lester Freeman. From The Wire, I think would be good.
Which one was he?
He is the guy that carved the wood, the doll furniture.
Oh, okay, yeah, and tracked down the.
He was like the old
discrepancy,
like,
in the.
You end up finding that containers. He was essentially McNulty that got busted down a long time ago, but he still got the chops. I thought he'd be interesting.
Probably.
Spooky Cat, who do you think are your top 10 female characters in TV history? She says, "Okay, that's a little too much pressure." Or maybe it's a guy. Just 10 female characters you like a lot. No repeats, please. If Jim says one, Aaron can't say, and vice versa. We'll get 20 kick-ass women from you guys. So
20 is so fucking much to ask.
This was actually hard to do, which is kind of a point, you know, speaking of feminism and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I haven't seen Buffy, Alias, Chuck, Dollhouse, or any of that other weed-y kind of bullshit. So those, like, you know, those are kind of like, you know, strong female character watchwords. I haven't seen any of that stuff. So you and I compiled, worked together on a list.
I just thought of one that we forgot.
Who?
Nomi from Sense8.
Oh, I haven't seen that. So there you go.
She's great.
All right. Zoe from Firefly.
Yeah.
Sarah Connor from the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Okay.
Skylar White. Controversial pick, but... If you look at her as a fully realized, three-dimensional, believable female character.
Who was self-actuated, I think, certainly, yeah.
Speaking of Justified, Ava Crowder.
Yeah, come on. Give me the other Justified one.
Winona? I didn't put Winona just because she's...
She's kind of a minor.
Minor, and plus character. she was part of the worst plot line of season two.
She did make...
She almost gets really disqualified from that. Mm-hmm. I will say that she's great for the inversion of the trope of the female companion of the anti-hero has got to be a stick in the mud bitch.
Yeah, yeah.
She's a really good answer to how you can go a different direction with that character. Just miscast. Arya Stark.
Yeah.
Jadzia Dax.
Okay, sure.
Not Dax Light, not new Dax. Old school, classic Dax.
Yes. Dax Light grows into her own role, but... yeah, Jadzia is the
Pixie
real Dax.
Two from Daredevil, Karen Page and Claire Temple. I thought awesome and a great direction to take things. Kima from The Wire.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Badass. And just as much of a pussy hound as as McNulty.
As any of them, yep.
Michonne from The Walking Dead.
Less of a character, but still.
She's getting, but you could say that in season three, certainly. I feel like that they've done a lot with her flashbacks, mm-hmm. and kind of going, seeing what's going on in her mind and as she's interacted with Carl and Rick. Like, I feel like she's definitely a real three-dimensional apocalyptic character.
I guess I'd just like to see more.
Sure.
More of her.
Nora Durst from The Leftovers.
Yeah, she's fucked up, but.
Everyone's fucked up on that show.
Everyone is, yeah.
Molly Salverson from Fargo season one.
Good one.
Spectacular character. Claire Underwood from the House of Cards. She mm-hmm. is also kind of fucked up, but she is a really strong character with lots of flaws and lots of strengths and played expertly by Robin Wright. Good stuff. Leslie Knope from Parks and Rec.
Okay. She's a bit of a buffoon,
but you know, everyone on that character,
she's likable.
Yeah, like Nick Offerman's a baboon too. I like him too. Baboon. Yeah, not a buffoon, a baboon.
Okay, sure.
In similar vein, Liz Lemon from 30 uh-huh. Rock. Great female character. And also, you know, another way, like a lot of people say females can't be funny. These women, hilarious.
Absolutely.
Kate McKinnon from SNL. I know you don't know her, but she's been on the new cast the last 3 years, and she is phenomenal. Hmm. Like, she's right there with the Amy Poehlers and the, I've drawn a blank on Liz Lemon's actual name.
Tina Fey.
Tina Fey's and all the greats. I think she's going to be one of those.
Is she a character? She's not a character.
No, that's her. That's the actress's name. But she can do anything. So she can do a spot on Justin Bieber. She's got a really good Chancellor for Germany, Angela Merkel. Oh my God, she's so good. She's got this like Russian peasant woman she trots out whenever Putin's doing something in the news. She's just really, really funny. Lana from Archer, Truckosaurus.
Hell
hands.
Yeah. Yeah, but as much shit as she has to put up with, too.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, Vanessa Ives from Penny Dreadful. This was a me, not you, because I don't think you've seen it.
I don't know her. Yeah,
Dana Scully.
Yeah,
Dana Scully from X-Files, of course.
The skeptic, sure.
And, I like her already. This was a you, not me. Starbuck from Battlestar Galactica.
Yep, she doesn't take any bullshit. She's a take charge kind of woman.
She said, I will say that she made the biggest impression out of anything that in the first season that I watched.
Yeah.
Michelle from California, what's the most amazing, funny, enjoyable, or unforgettable moment you've had in Bald Move history?
FanFest.
There's like 10 different moments from there, like being at Tajali, eating dinner with the location manager and Victor and Alex Crazy Eights. And
sure.
All those guys and just kind of how cool they were. That yep. was, and then, you know, meeting Al Godot, the stunt coordinator, and this, meeting that many people that utterly convinced me how passionate they were for what they did and kind of made me feel better as a fan. Hmm. It was really cool.
Indeed.
There's another question. If Matthew Weiner was to create either a Mad Men movie or do a Mad Men sequel, this time set in 80s, and you were brought in as a character, what would your character be and why? I'd be the coked up 80s version of Stan.
Stan. Oh, okay. Yeah, you would.
That'd be like, you know, the art department, and I'd be, you know, drawing crazy things and storyboarding stuff and doing rails of coke.
That sounds about right.
Yep. How about you?
I think I would be the Tom Smikowski, the guy from Office Space, who is the liaison between the tech guys and in this case, the admin.
Oh, you're so a like, people person? Is that what you're trying to say?
God damn it. What the hell is wrong with you people?
Why don't you understand?
I'm a people person. Yeah.
Okay. So you'd be,
because I can,
you do realize that means you'd be reporting directly to Harry Crane.
Sure. That's fine.
Oh, that's fine.
Well, I mean, Harry Crane, I don't even know if, you'd have a Harry Crane-esque person, I guess, in there, yeah.
It's just the eight. Well, I guess
in the 80s?
Yeah, he'd be a more powerful, set in his ways, lecherous, fatter, White Castle sack packed on version of himself.
I don't know
that you've thought this through,
Jim. I wouldn't mind the White Castle, but yeah, you're right. He'd be a nightmare.
Luke asked us, Kirk, Picard, Sisko, Janeway, or Archer?
Come on. I'm a child of the 80s. I'm going to pick Picard. All day, every day.
That was my opinion as a young man. I have since switched allegiances to Kirk. I think Kirk wiped Picard's.
Come on, man.
No.
Come on.
Kirk is just going to
shoot his way out of everything.
Kirk is the only one that defeated the Kobayashi Maru simulation. Only one in Starfleet history.
It's true. But he had a shorter run than Picard.
Shorter run?
Picard fended off the Borg. By himself, man. Well, okay, Wolf 359 was not a singular effort, but...
Kirk made peace with the Klingon Empire. Hmm. Yeah, because Picard fought, got his ass kicked by the Borg
like
a
Picard
couple times
did
and fought
that
a
too.
Bunch of rear guard actions, but...
I feel like Picard made peace with the Klingon Empire as well, didn't he?
Captain James T. Kirk was made a starship captain while he's a virile 20-something green Orion girl-fucking captain. Yep. Captain Picard, all of his hair gone before he got his first command. All of it.
Singular focus.
Gone.
He didn't have time for the lovemaking bullshit with Green Alien.
No, he was playing on his flute and doing space archaeology and collecting weird burial masks and bullshit.
Sure.
Shakespeare.
He's a more well-rounded character.
Yeah, this is more why Kirk would beat his ass, because all Kirk wants to do is...
Hey, man, we're not debating who would win in a fist fight.
Is con starships and fuck women. That's it.
If we were debating who would win in a fist fight, you're right, Kirk. Hands
you'd
down.
You'd have to double hammer.
You would.
Shatter Picard's spine.
But I think Picard is a better captain.
All right.
I think he's less liable to fly off the handle and do something reckless. It's going to get his whole crew killed.
Which is why he would lose, because Kirk absolutely would throw his crew into the meat grinder and win.
I'm just saying, Picard survived an encounter that Kirk did not.
What, the Borg?
No. Dr. What's-his-face?
Oh, when old-ass Grandpa Kirk got teleported to the future?
Wait, old-ass Grandpa? They're both old-ass grandpas in that scene, man.
I guess that's true.
Come on.
All right. Okay, then below that tier... So we got some jostling at the top, clearly.
Sure.
Below that tier, it's Sisko, right?
It's Kirk, yeah.
Well, okay, asshole. Below that, we have Sisko.
Yeah, come on.
Then Janeway. Yep. And then Archer, because I don't know anything about Archer. I saw like 3.5 episodes of Enterprise.
And they were all terrible.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Yeah.
And Sisko. Janeway is a... Janeway's a terrible captain. She's a terrible captain.
Yeah, I don't... Like Janeway's a captain.
I stopped watching like 3 or 4 seasons in, but no, like I just, the decisions she made were not in her crew's best interest. And that's the other thing. Like, if she could uphold the Federation law and fuck over her crew, boy, would she ever. But mm-hmm. if she could throw Federation law out the window just for whatever, she would. Like, so inconsistent. Just a terribly written character.
Ugh. Can I say that Sisko really grew on me? The second watch through Deep
Space
Nine.
Well, yeah. Like, the first 2 seasons, I was kind of like arms crossed, side-eyeing him. Like, you're not Picard. You're not fucking Picard.
I liked...
When he shaved his head and grew out the goatee, Sisko arrived.
Like, I don't know what else to call this,
when
but,
they went
like,
the purple jacket
hard-headedness.
Era. Yeah.
But Sisko has, like, this rigidity to him that I really like. This idea that in the face of obscene pressure, he won't buckle. Mm-hmm.
When Worf takes his pants off on,
I mean, aside,
on the bridge.
Aside from the Borg, like, you know, Picard got captured by the Borg. Whatever. Turned into a fucking
Borg.
Got
tortured by Romulans.
Yeah. Well, Cardassians too, right? Lara Forlights, that sort of thing.
Oh, you're right. That's a Cardassian.
Yeah. So, like, but you know, Sisko just flat out fought one of the most terrifying alliances
right on the front line,
the Federation
there,
has ever seen.
Time,
yeah.
Sure. With just the Defiant.
Yeah.
Was just something barely bigger than a roundabout. I mean,
it's pretty impressive.
It was hand designed to fight the Borg, though. It's not nothing.
Yeah.
Blade of armor for the win. Superman, my question as a first timer on the forum is in relation to your cult background. I worked for a Scientologist a few years ago. This is the last question, by the way.
Oh, then we're God.
Done. I worked for a Scientologist a few years ago who forced us to do weird exercises where we had to stare at each other every day at the Bald Moose studio.
Is that legal? I don't know that you can do that.
There's legal, and then there's what people will put up with before they actually file a claim with the Department of Labor. I even had to visit the org for a quote-unquote course. Needless to say, I no longer work there. My question is, if you had to choose a cult to join now, whether real or fictional, i.e. the Guilty Remnant, what cult and why? Or if you prefer to start your own cult, what kind of weirdness, awesomeness would you require to be a member? So... As a former cult member, I cannot really even endorse this mental exercise. Like, I'm not talking cult. Like, so, like, to answer your question, I'd probably join the Rastafarians.
Oh, because is that a cult?
I think they so there's cult as defined as like what Jesus started back in the first century and is now a major religion. Okay. Like, you know, this small kind of following of people, and then there's cult as defined by the Bite model, where they. Yeah. Control the information, they control your behavior, they control who you can spend time. I forget all the
what is T?
I don't know.
What
technology
is.
Teeth, they bite you. Yeah. They literally, that's the Bite model. They bite your ass and they don't let go. But if you go and research the Bite model, there's a clear model of if you want to know if you're in a cult or not, does it fit this model where they try to put you in this mental box and keep you there. And I feel like the Rastafarians, every time I study them, I find that they are very fascinating in their philosophy and how they approach life, and also they smoke weed. Part of their religion. They like, you know, spark the herb in the chalice, and they reason
2 feet long.
They reason with each other. Because it's like, you know, it's like they don't just get high and they actually
play Mario Brothers.
Yeah, they get high and talk about social issues and justice and whatnot. They have kooky beliefs, but that's like the fun definition of cult.
Yeah.
A real cult, like Scientology or Jehovah's Witnesses or Heaven's Gate, what have you, are terrifying, and no one should be involved with them.
Agreed.
We did joke about starting a Bald Move cult and retaking Beaver Island, because that's the thing about Beaver Island. It's I'm not making this up. It was colonized by, so I guess after Joseph Smith died, you had the Brigham Young. And he actually wrested control. And then you had this Strang guy.
King Strang.
James Strang. James Strang took about 4,000 of his Mormon apostles and disciples to Beaver Island and formed a commune. The whole island was nothing but Mormons. And he ruled as a king there, as a no-shit king for like 4 or 5 years. And then was assassinated. And then a gang of ruffians comprised mostly of Irish Catholics drove the Mormons from the island and set up shop. And it still has a distinctly kind of Irish bent to the island.
So we thought it would be amazing to drive the Irish from the island.
Well, we started like, cult. Wouldn't it be funny if we like had like a Bald Move meetup on Beaver Island? Because it's a great vacation spot. Like once a week, we just like take it over. And they were like, ooh, Beaver Island might. It's like, you know, we're just like these guys and we have this following and there's going to be a few hundred, maybe 1,000 people show up and quote unquote take over the island. Like they might get assassinated and get the Irish toughs to run us off again. I don't know. We'll see in 5 years when the first Bald Move meet happens on Beaver Island.
I find it really hard to believe that there were ever thousands of people living on that island. Where is the settlement? Where are the buildings that kept them alive through the winter? Did they all crumble? I mean, this wasn't that long ago.
I mean, like, because that's the other thing. Like, all the other islands were inhabited up until, like, the last 40 years. And I guess, like,
did the Earth reclaim
It's island? Like, I'll let you know, because next year when I sail to, like, Garden or Hog Island or High Island, I will let you know, because I'm going to seek out the ruins of there's schools and mills and churches and all this stuff.
I just didn't see any of that when we were out there.
You can find it. Like, there's a couple things here and there, but most of the stuff, you know, like the harbor town's still there.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. That is because I don't know what its peak population is in the summer, but only like 300 people stay there year round. But yeah, I bet the Earth reclaims a lot of his shit. There used to be a railroad. Fucking railroad that's gone on that island.
That's
just to move logs around. So that's it. Do you have a cult suggestion?
No,
I figured
stay away from cults.
Stay away from cults. Cults are bad. Okay,
that's my suggestion.
Anyone that has the key to happiness, and all you got to do is follow him and give me worldly possessions. Put your hand on your wallet, and back away slowly. that's my advice.
Yep.
All right, that's it. That's for 10 million. Thanks for all the cool questions, and if anyone actually listened to the end, thanks for sticking with us. We had a lot of fun. I don't know what the next mile is. Like 10 million.
100 million. 100 million.
No. Like, it'll take us about a year. At the rate things are going, it'll take, like, another year to get another 10 million, year and a half.
I guess.
Like, you just mentioned today, like, we're almost to 11 million. So I'm like, fuck. This is crazy.
I don't know. Well, whenever we feel it's appropriate, we'll do another one of these.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe there'll be some other kind of milestone.
You know, not to sell y'all, but we do this thing called Lunch Jim and Aaron where you can pop in and ask us questions with the Google Hangout Q&A app anytime you want.
Yeah.
For as low as $1 a month, as I mentioned, club.baldmove.com. See how I work that advertisement in?
It's good stuff.
Starting to level up this marketing advertising thing. We got to go, though. So thanks for joining us, and we will see you guys next time.
See ya.
Bye.
What was that?
I don't know. How long was that fucking thing?